Hello and welcome everyone to our Practitioner's Adrenal Fatigue Training. This is our third and last call for the program, and I'm excited to have you here. I know we've been covering a lot of ground as we go through, and I've gotten a lot of feedback that this has been really helpful. And you know, my goal with this program was to make sure that you just really felt confident in working with people with adrenal fatigue, both from the standpoint of assessing which stage they're in, doing the lab work, reading the lab work, and helping to design personalized programs for them. I'm not a big fan of the one-size-fits-all approach. I know a lot of people teach that and want that, and I know we all would like that if it would work, because it would be a whole lot less work for us. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of times we just need to personalize things for the particular person, for their specific point in life, their particular stress levels, their particular gut health issues, their genetics. I mean, so many things that go into making the program personalized, to say nothing, and not least of which is important, is personal preference and societal and ethnic background. So all those things play in. So there is no one-size-fits-all approach, because if there was, people wouldn't really need us. They'd fill out a questionnaire. They'd say, oh, I have adrenal fatigue. They'd go to the local Whole Foods or health food store. They'd pick up some packaged supplements that say adrenal support, and that would help them. And indeed, that does help a lot of people. Don't get me wrong, there are people like that. But the people that are coming to see you, that are paying their hard-earned money for your consultation time to talk to you one-on-one and in person, need the personalized approach. And there are a lot of people who can deal with and go with and follow a kind of a, you know, standard kind of approach. So I'm excited to be able to help you to be able to do that. And yeah, there's some specific guidelines, and there's certain things that a lot of people are going to need, but you're going to have to learn the nuances of being able to customize it in order for you to be super successful. At least that's from my standpoint and my belief system. So I want to get started. I want to do a little bit of a review. I hope that that's okay with y'all, because I really think that doing a review is an important piece of this, because the more you hear it, the more it's going to sink in. So we'll do a little review of what we've gone through before, more quickly than we did initially, and then we're going to go into doing some more cases. So before we begin, and I do this at the beginning of all my presentations, and I would encourage you to do it too, because there's so many people out there that are, you know, they just are looking for a fix, and they don't want to go to their doctors. And it's true, a lot of doctors are not, they're not giving them what they need, yet you have to be really clear with them that unless you are licensed in your state, seeing a person face to face, you are not diagnosing and you are not treating them. You are not curing them. I really kind of take offense to some of the books out there now, the this cure or the that cure, because cure is just such a, it's a word that can get us in trouble. And if you, people are litigation happy these days, so don't use the word cure. You're helping, you're balancing, you're educating. You really want to make a partnership with your client to say, look, you've been in this state, your adrenals are stressed out. I'm going to teach you some of the stuff that I've learned through my experience with my own health, with my family's health, and with other clients that I think can help you. And we're going to identify things that you may not be identifying on your own, and you still need to work with a doctor if you're on medication, la la la, all that stuff. So just make sure that you're really clear on your boundaries with people. So just as the overview, we started out the big picture. This is kind of my blueprint. It's not rocket science, but it certainly looks complicated when you look at it, doesn't it? But you help people to determine where they're at. I called it the exhaustion index. We use quizzes, we use labs, and we use exams. I've taught you all of those along. I'll probably give you a little bit of a review tonight. Then you really have to identify what the heck got them there. If they didn't have stressors, they wouldn't be exhausted, right? What are those stressors? And stress does not just mean that you have bills to pay that you can't meet, or your, you know, son's in jail and your daughter's age 15 and pregnant, and, you know, all those stressors that are the mental, emotional stressors that we think about. But it's way more than that. There's dietary stresses. There's the GMOs. There's the pesticides. There's the foods that are processed. There's hydrogenated oil. And it's really up to you to help them determine what these stressors are. Because you will find that, just like in my practice, you have people that come in that say, oh, I have adrenal fatigue. Tell me what herbs to take. And that's all they think that it is, because they've been made to believe that. But it's about changing the underlying causes, and the diet and lifestyle are huge. So those stresses come from all over, from the environment, from the food, from the stresses emotionally, but also from hidden infections. And gut is a real big issue there. If they've got hidden infections that they don't know about that are in their gut, and that are producing inflammatory chemicals and producing leaky gut and inflammation, then that's going to be a stress that your adrenals are going to perceive just like a hungry tiger. So it's really important that you spend time with them and you let people know. It's very important to determine how you got to where you're at, so we can correct and rebuild and prevent it from happening again. And then there's the get energized, right? That's where those herbs come in and the foods come in. But a big piece of that is transforming those stresses that are the mental and emotional. Because so many people these days are loaded with the pressures, the deadlines, the finances. So it's really important that you spend a considerable amount of time with people, coaching them about their sleep, about their relationships even. I know you're not a relationships coach, but encouraging them, if that's part of what the stress is, that they need to get help around that, about all the different things that they stress about, and teaching them the tools they need to transform that. Whether you fall in love with HeartMath the way I have and use that, or you have yoga, meditation, Pilates, exercise, whatever it takes for them to transform their stress, making sure that they have that in place. And then we're going to look at optimizing their diet, their nutrients, and their herbs. And we're going to do it a little bit differently based on whether they're in stage one, stage two, or stage three. Because certain herbs that are good for stage one are not going to be good for stage three. And we'll review those stages again, just so that you have it foremost in your mind. A lot of times as I'm teaching these things, I may gloss over certain things that I think it's just, well, that's just, everybody knows that. When in reality, if this is relatively new learning for you, and even if you've been in practice for a little while, until you've been doing this for decades, a lot of the language is just, it's just not there. You don't have it right at the forefront. And that's not for you to feel bad about. That's just for you to, this is great. I'm just going to keep working with this. So in the diet, I talk about the energizing elixirs, and those can be customized to people. We heard from people in the program that some people found those elixirs like, oh my God, they're miracle cures. And I hate, there's the word cure again. But others found that, well, they really irritated my tummy, which goes back to, whoa, what's going on in their gut? Or they got too energized, or they got sleepy. Usually when you give somebody adaptogenic herbs and they get really sleepy, that's because that's what their body needed. Not necessarily that they're having a bad reaction, because the adaptogenic herbs are really smart and they kind of mix in with the physiology and biochemistry and give the person what they need. So it'll slow them down or speed them up. So if you have somebody who says, oh God, those energizing elixirs, every time I drink one, I want to go to sleep. It could be that they're allergic to one of the ingredients in there. But it could be that one of those adaptogens is going like, hey lady, you need to slow down. And then timing of meals, critical. We talked about that. Nutrient-dense meals, we've talked about that. And eliminating the diet stressors. And I know, you know, we're all not perfect either with our dietary stressors, but it's really important that we get better and better with it to heal our own adrenals and to help people with it. A lot of people don't want to give up coffee. Well, that can't be the first thing you do to somebody in adrenal fatigue stage three. You maybe start to wean them off of it and wean them onto other caffeine sources that aren't quite as acid-forming and as stimulating. And then you move them towards maybe lowering and lowering the caffeine as you build them up. So some of these things with the eliminating the diet stressors work really well right at the beginning, like hydrogenated fats out the door, processed grains out the door, sugar, throw it away. But stuff like the caffeine, where they're actually using it as a drug to keep their their adrenals going. You may have to move more slowly with weaning them off of that as you give them things to replace that and rebuild and repair. So a lot to consider here, and all of the modules in the main program, the CAFE program, you have access to, and we've also given you extra versions of them on the page with all of the materials for the practitioner. So you have them at your fingertips, the 30-day protocols, the step-by-step of reading the exams and tests. These are all things that you have access to. And you have lists and lists of the herbs, the supplemental nutrients, and all that are good for stage 1, 2, or 3, or are good for all stages. In that case, then you would pick and choose based on the person. So this is not, like I said, it's not color by number. It's something that you're going to sit down and really think through with each person to see what it is that you think they're going to go best with, not just based on their adrenal situation, but based on specific herbs and their effects on other situations in their body. You know, so for somebody who also has thyroid issues and also has blood sugar issues and seems to have adrenal distress, well, ashwagandha can be an awesome herb for them because it's good with all of those areas. Someone who has issues with their gut, you may be choosing some herbs that support the adrenals that are also good immune boosters. And good old circadian rhythm. Again, I keep saying about this one, it's a beautiful little picture and I love it. It's not exactly to scale, but you know, it's done in a beautiful way. But we want to realize that the cortisol levels are going to be low during the night. As we approach daytime, the cortisol levels are going to come up. As we go from day into night, the cortisol levels come down. The rising cortisol in the morning is what stimulates the body to wake up and face another day. And oftentimes what you find is that people start to have that cortisol going up a little bit too soon, and they start to wake up too soon in the night. The cortisol is pretty much flatlined from bedtime till, you know, say 4 in the morning. It should be pretty much flatlined, really flat. And then at 4, it just starts to make its way up so that at 6 or 8, when you get up, when the person gets up, that the cortisol is at its peak. So between 4 and 8, you might be in that lesser sleep if you're still in bed by 8. But before 4, that should be the time when they're getting the deepest sleep. But if that cortisol starts to come up before 4, or it starts to come up too rapidly starting at 4, and it reaches its peak, then the person's not going to be able to go back to sleep. So all of these things, your knowledge of this rhythm, of the physiology, and of the biochemistry is what's going to help you to figure out what's going on with this person. And let me just reiterate, it takes practice and practice and practice. So don't be hard on yourself if you find yourself going, oh, what was that she said? Let me look that up. You always want to have reference guides around you. I'm sitting in my room surrounded by reference guides. I have 3 little shelves that I can put books on that are right near my desk that I want to reach for. And I'm always shifting those around. Like, what do I want to have really quick, immediate access to so that I can reference? Reference guides are great. They're your friends. So just reminding, and this is something that when you're explaining this to people and when you're discussing with somebody, taking them through their adrenal support program, it's really having them understand all those dangers associated with stress. You know, we said, let's identify their stressors. But once you do, some people don't want to give up some of their stressors, right? They're addicted to some of their stressors. So when you can reinforce with them the various places that the stressors are affecting them negatively, like raising their blood pressure, increasing their heart rate, raising their blood sugar, which contributes to what? Well, in addition to all the dangerous stuff, the unsightly excess belly fat and brain fog, increased respiration, decreased digestion, or overactive, kind of hyperstimulated, irritable digestion, decreased immune system, increased inflammation, and decreased sleep. All of those things can be effects from stress, from cortisol. And cortisol has an effect on all these systems. So feel free to use this chart or something like it to explain to people, whether you're doing a presentation to a group, or whether you're doing a webinar, or whether you're sitting knee to knee with someone, it's important to have some visuals so that people can get it. You go, oh, this is all the things that stress you. One of these days I'm going to redo this slide and put in all these little pictures that get, you know, kind of really gorgeous little cute cartoons or whatever to make it even stand out more for people. But whatever you do, have something graphical when you're explaining to people their results and what you want to help them with. And good old heart math is my favorite stress transformation technique. So hand over your heart, hand over your belly, or just not. During the day mostly I don't do that. It's only when I'm doing it deliberate. And I just go, oh yeah, look at that picture. I actually printed this picture out and I put it close to my desk. It just fell down. Where is it? But I had it like hanging up right near my desk so I could just glance up at it and go. And just as quickly as that, you could be there. You can be in that place and have your people practice it by you practicing it first and seeing how important it is. Why do I talk about this stuff all the time? And why do I tell people to do this thing all day? Because it's transformed me and my stress levels. And it's gotten me through the last month, which has been major Mongo stress, culminating last weekend, last Thursday, when this call had to get rescheduled because of website outages. So, and I just keep breathing and using this technique. And the more you practice it when you don't need it, the more it's your friend when you do. So breathe appreciation, breathe appreciation. 30-second breaks throughout the day. They're going to get good at it, and they're going to really help soothe their adrenals and stop the constant breakdown. So we have some test cases. Yay! So I want this to be interactive. I want to make sure before we go into some of the cases that we don't have questions. So if you have any questions that you want to type into either the chat or on the Q&A, go ahead and do that. I don't see any yet. Or raise your hand. And I'll keep the panel open with the hand raising. And Lynn, I see you're on the phone. And if you're also on the chat, raise your hand if there's stuff that I need to look at it on the chat. If it's stuff that, you know, can't wait. Because right now, if there's anything that you want to talk about, I want to talk about it. Just make sure that you're clear before we move on. We'll go through a lot of the details and a lot of the protocols as we go through the cases. So I don't see any. I don't see any hands raised. I don't see any questions. So we'll just go ahead. All right. So as I'm speaking, as I'm going through these cases, go ahead and write down. So Michelle says, I uploaded my test results, wanted to see if it would be something we could go over tonight. I looked at those, Michelle, and those aren't really adrenal tests. We'd already gone over your adrenal, and those are much more detailed tests that I would have to sit with for probably half an hour to really lay out and understand before presenting. They're not things that are even related to the adrenal. Well, they're related, of course, but they're not adrenal stuff. But we can do that in the ERC program, absolutely. And you'll get some private coaching with me in there, and then you'll also can do that on the calls as well. So yes, totally go over them. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you, Michelle. Okay. So I'm going to check, and then we're going to go and look at some. Okay, good. So just a review. Excuse me. I'm going to take a little sip of water. Okay. Just a review of the stages of adrenal fatigue. We're just going to go through the major, the stage one and stage three. But stage one is tired and wired, right? They're just, they're agitated and they're exhausted, agitated, exhausted. Sympathetic dominant, it just drains their reserves and they're subject to all those negative effects on of cortisol on all of those things. And because of the highly active cortisol, usually, but not always, have people have that slump at mid-afternoon and then are wired at bedtime. Sometimes they're just wired all day long. And a lot of times those folks don't even realize that they're in the early stages of adrenal fatigue, and they don't realize that the cortisol is having such a negative effect, because sometimes they're actually still feeling pretty darn good because they're overstimulated. So just watch out for that. It's not necessarily going to show tired and wired. It could be just wired. Stage two, I call it barely hanging on. the reserves are becoming depleted, but still have, you know, the ability to work through the day. DHA goes low. Cortisol might be normal, but there's usually dips. It's usually not just cortisol curve looks perfect, but the DHA is low. No, it usually looks more like the DHA is low and the cortisol total is low. The sum of all the cortisols is normal, but they have some lows and some highs and their curve looks kind of erratic. That's the more common pattern. But it could be, just so you know, you look at their cortisol, you go, well, it looks pretty darn normal to me. And then you look at their DHA and it's down. So you know that they're probably in the early stages of stage two. The reserves are low and the immune system can become compromised and they might start to complain about the low libido. And then the exhaustion. And there's different stages of exhaustion, obviously. You've seen a lot of cases so far. You've seen people who are flatlined. You've seen people who are just low, right below the normal curve. There's all different stages and there's all different abilities for people to cope. And sometimes you get that case where you look at them and you say, wow, you didn't look as that exhausted to me. Or they say, well, I don't feel that exhausted, but apparently I am. And a lot of people have different levels of dealing with it. So the low DHA, the low cortisol, the sum, and also kind of variations from the normal pattern. And then you're definitely seeing people suffering from the negative effects of chronic elevated cortisol. They may have low libido, they may have sex hormone imbalances, they may have, you know, PMS, or they're going through a painful menopause. They may be showing accelerated signs of aging, you know, some sagging skin, some memory failing. They might be showing some belly fat where they never did before. They're just definitely showing it. Blood sugar swings up and down. So those are the three stages in a nutshell. Of course, we're talking people, not textbooks. And that's something I want everybody to always remember. You may learn of this is the way something classically presents. However, if it's not exactly the way it's laid out in a textbook, they're a person, they're individualized. So you have to really take that into account. We're talking people. So the progression. I always think of people as normal, as when are they normal? Well, for most people, it's when they're first born. But for a lot of the poor babies these days, they're not even born in the normal range. Their adrenals are already fired up and they're in the excitatory phase because of mom's exposures during pregnancy. And it's even said that a baby that's born in a household where there's fear, where mom didn't feel safe, is going to be born with hyperactive adrenals right from the start. And that's kind of sad. Plus, you think of all the physiologic stresses and the pesticides and the crappy food that most moms are eating still when they're pregnant with babe, and babies grow up, are born with nutrient imbalances. And so a lot of our kids are being born in either a hyperadrenal state or a depleted state. And then they're immediately given vaccines and washed down in the hospital with sterile, really bad chemical-laden shampoos and stuff and powders put on them. And there's all kinds of exposures that these poor little babes are coming in the world with. And so a lot of the adrenal stress starts there. So most of us start out normal. We go into the stage of high cortisol where DHA is still normal. The body is adapting, you know, and Hans Selye calls it the adaptation, you know. And then once they're in that for a while, then their DHA starts to drop, even though the cortisol is high. And then the cortisol levels start to drop because the adrenals can't keep up with the load. They go into stage two, where while their numbers total cortisol looks normal, their curve isn't anywhere near normal. It's just it's a decline. And then finally stage three, where they're depleted. And your job is to help them to assess where they are so you can explain to them how serious it might be and you can give them some recommendations based on exactly where they are. All right, so we're going to take a look at I'm going to review some of these charts on the stage one, stage two, and three, and then we'll go into some real examples. So I wanted you to know that you know, this review I'm hoping was helpful, so I'd love to hear from you. Raise your hand if this was helpful. and raise your hand if this generated any questions, and we can take them before we go into a little bit more detail. And repetition, repetition, repetition. So I'm going to go through a few cases on my own, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you guys do some cases, kind of like we did on the last call. And this is where you're going to get your practice, is I'm going to pull up a case, and we'll take some volunteers, and you'll go through them, and I'll help you along the way to fill in the gaps. So with stage one, remember the thing we're looking at, right? The thing we're looking at for stage one, for any of these stages to start, is we're looking at this, the total. Now, when you're looking at the total, you want to see if there's this extra piece in here, because this normal range here for total is based on a 4-point cortisol. So if they also have that fifth point cut in because they have sleep issues, then you want to take that away. So 53.1 minus 7.3 would give us somewhere in the neighborhood of 46. Okay? 46 is still high. So this person still would be considered stage one. Okay, makes sense? So we're basically looking at that. We're also looking at the DHEA. And I really want to clarify for people, what's a normal DHEA? Because on another call, the last call, people were saying, oh, well, my DHEA is normal. And I looked and it was 2.1. That's not a normal range. That's a reference range. That's the reference range where most people fall in. That doesn't mean it's the healthy range. So even with these other numbers, like with the cortisol in the range of 13 to 24 in the morning, it's a pretty wide range. We'd like to see people towards the middle or even sort of towards the high end of that range, maybe the 75th percentile of that range in the morning to get them awake and going. So if somebody's at the very low end of that range, then it's problematic. So we look at those ranges as being averages. We want to find our person somewhere in the middle, not going towards depletion or, you know, near overexcitement. So the DHEA, the actual good range, and write this down on one of your slides, write this down somewhere. The ideal for DHEA is somewhere between 6 and 10. Well, good range, a decent range is between 6 and 10. Let's just say ideal is probably 7 to 8 or 9. That would be more ideal. 8 might be a really good number. Okay, so if somebody's at 2, they're depleted. They've been there a long time and they're depleted. When we look at, we don't normally look at the DHEA, cortisol DHEA ratio in isolation because it can be misleading. But the cortisol DHEA ratio really should be in the range of, say, 6 to 8. In this case, the cortisol DHEA ratio is much higher, meaning that this person is in the state of sympathetic dominance. So this is a stage one. All right, very high, almost out of the range, high in the morning cortisol. Then she comes down to middle of the range here at noon. And then in the afternoon, she's way up here, at way above the range in the middle of the afternoon. And then she's up decent. So this is a 4-point, so we wouldn't take it out. We would say 53.1. But say this person had done the 201 test with a sleep, I think they call it the 201-S, with one extra cortisol, and it was taken between 2 and 4 a.m., we would take that out of the total. Okay, so this person is clearly a stage one, but because we are here at, bedtime is 7.3, unlikely that this person is having good sleep, right? Because it should be way down here at 1 to 2, really. And it's up here at 7. So this person is likely not sleeping well. They're having this elevation of cortisol in the afternoon. So there's something that's causing them to definitely get more agitated or stressed as the day goes on. It could be just the food that they're eating. It could be they're eating foods they're allergic to, foods that are processed. It could be that they're having a blood sugar low after lunch. Maybe they're eating a very highly processed, high carbohydrate lunch, their sugars are dropping, and then that causes an emergency response. But the fact that it still stays high up until they went to bed says to me it's a little deeper probably than just blood sugar. Okay, so what we want to do, I'm just going to go quickly through the protocols of what we're going to do. So what we're going to do in this case is we want to help this person bring down their cortisols. How are we going to do that? We're going to look at, guess what? We're going to look at lifestyle. We're going to look at what's causing it. Look for blood sugar imbalances, hidden infections, processed foods, very high response to stressful situations. We're going to look at helping them with those, helping them to reduce the stresses. And then what we want to do is help the body to rebuild and repair, and we want to do things to help them bring those down. They can certainly do it with herbal teas. They can work with lavender. They can work with chamomile. They can work with milky oat and lemon balm and milky oat. So those are kinds of herbs. But you can also look at herbs that are more specific to bringing down cortisol, like magnolia, and also phosphorylated serine or phosphatidylserine, which is an amino acid complex. And those can tend to bring the cortisol levels down. The beauty of the phosphatidylserine is that it also helps to repair the hippocampus, the seat of short-term memory, which usually gets destroyed or damaged in any case by cortisol. So that's our stage one. What would we do in terms of that? Yeah, so adaptogens could be helpful. And if they had a thyroid issue, I might be looking at, say, ashwagandha. Some of the adaptogens that are more neutral, like the mushrooms, can be helpful in this situation as long as they don't have an allergy. So at any point you want to ask a question, just go ahead and raise your hand, or especially if you have a question about a specific case, or you can type it in. So here's a stage two. Okay, so we're going to be going through three of these, stage one, stage two, stage three, reviewing what's presenting in each of these stages, and then we're going to put up ones that don't say the stage, and that's where you guys are going to have to work at getting this done. So here we have a stage two. So what do we notice right away? The first thing we're going to look at is our cortisol sum, and it's 23.6. The range is 23 to 42. So right now, we're at the very low end of normal, but we are normal. So technically, this person would be in a stage two, but they're very close to being a stage one. Very close. Okay? So, what do we look at next? Well, we've looked at that. We looked at the DHEA. DHEA is 2.6. Remember what I said, even though that shows up as being in that normal range, or that reference range, not normal range, of 2 to 10, I want you to cross it off and put in, you're really shooting for 7 to 8, really, ideally. So DHEA is low. Cortisol is low normal. And what do we have going on? We have the best, we have somewhat decent in the morning. It's just a little bit above the reference range. At noon, it's probably it's best that it is with regard to the reference range. At the mid-afternoon, it's dropped below the reference range, and at nighttime, it's all the way down again. Now, this is a person who's not likely to have a whole lot of problems sleeping that are related to cortisol issues. If this person is having trouble with sleep, it's likely due to some other causes. There may be some other, you know, inflammatory processes going on. Maybe they're not making enough melatonin, any number of things, but unlikely to have cortisol-induced sleep disturbance. Okay, unless the person complains they're also waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, then you'd want to get a nighttime. So just let me just refresh on when would you get just a straight panel, and when would you add the extra vials for nighttime? So you're working with somebody and they say, oh yeah, I'm really exhausted in the morning, but I get up, I make it through the day, I barely make it through the day, my head hits the pillow at 9:30 at night, and I don't wake up till I have to get up the next day. That person does not have a cortisol-induced problem with sleep. But say you have a person who says, I go to bed at an early hour like I'm supposed to, and I can't fall asleep for hours. I just lay there with my mind racing. That can be related to cortisol. The third option is the person who says, oh, I fall asleep just fine, but I'm awake 2 or 3 hours later, and then I just keep waking up throughout the night. That could very much be related to cortisol. Of course, it could be other things to keep in mind. Like if a person has problems with parasites, Parasites like to lay eggs in the middle of the night, so that can keep people awake. Sometimes they lay eggs and they cause people to be itchy. That can cause people to wake up, right? Sometimes there's a trauma that's happened in the past, and that's usually related to cortisol going up because they've been involved in a trauma, a burglary, somebody's broken into their house, they had parents who fought, or a dad that got drunk, or they were sexually abused. All of these things are things you need to be keeping in mind when people are complaining about the middle of the night wakings, especially when everything else starts to come into balance and this doesn't. A lot of times there's that stuff that's gone on and their brain is programmed. It's not safe to go to sleep. It's not safe to go to sleep. It's not safe to go to sleep. And if your brain's been programmed for 40 or 50 years that it's not safe to go to sleep, what do you think is going to happen when it comes time to go to sleep? They're not going to be able to fall asleep. Or they're going to fall asleep and then they're going to wake up because it's like, wake up, don't sleep too deeply. Wake up, don't sleep too deeply. You might get hurt. In those cases, that would be something to refer to people to some sort of a therapeutic, to EFT tapping, to a counselor, to somebody that they could work with to help them reprogram. HeartMath is good for helping to reprogram, but they have to really be diligent about it. They have to be able to stop and intersect those thoughts. But a lot of them don't even realize this, and so sometimes it can get really deep and really edgy, and it would be good to mention to them that they may want to have help with somebody in case that's something that unearths. So that's your stage two. Your stage two treatments, you're basically going to, again, we always want to reduce the stress. What are the stresses? But we're really focusing here on rebuilding. We want to make sure that they're getting their vitamin C and their pantothenic acid to support their adrenals in building up again. We want to give them some sort of adaptogens that are going to be a little energizing. At these low points, we may want to do some licorice, especially that 4 in the afternoon one. We want to bring it up a little bit with licorice. I probably wouldn't give them licorice at 4 in the afternoon. I'd probably give them licorice about 2 hours before whenever that test was taken. But that could be helpful as long as you're dealing with somebody with low rather than high blood pressure. So you might give them some ashwagandha, some ginseng. But I would look through your charts and play it up against the person. So if you've got a choice of 6 or 8 herbs, you're not going to give them all of them, although some of those formulas are what I call the kitchen sink formulas, right? They're not real customized, but they've thrown everything in there in the hopes to help as many people as possible. And many of them do. I'm not dissing those formulas. I think they work really well. A lot of them do. But if they're taking those formulas and it's not working, it's time to really dig and understand this. Okay? And then looking at, again, it's more important to look at the bioidenticals like the pregnenolone and DHEA in a case like this where it's a stage 2 or even a stage 3. In the stage 1s, they could be helped by that, but if you give somebody in stage 1 more pregnenolone without addressing the root of their stress, most of that pregnenolone is going to be converted into more cortisol. So if you ever give somebody pregnenolone and you find that a stage 1 gets more hypey and revved up, it's probably because you haven't addressed the underlying stress, and especially if it's like some sort of an overgrowth or some sort of an infection somewhere that they don't even know they have. It's hard to address. So it's really important to keep these things in mind. And we have stage 3. Bottom line. Now, this isn't a terrible stage 3, right? Because look at the cortisol sum. It's 19. You look at the DHEA. It's 2.2. So these are low. But we look at the chart, we've seen them worse, right? This somewhat closely resembles the shape of the chart. It's just all the way down at the bottom. When people are in really severe, long-standing stage 3, we often see a straight line across the bottom. You know, their numbers are pretty much flatlined. And in some of those cases, the only way to get them back is to actually give them some adrenal tissue, to give them either a glandular or to get them to go to the doctor and get prescribed low-dose cortisone. Now, those are my last resorts, but sometimes that's needed for short periods of time. A lot of people are going into glandular supplements in stage 1 or stage 2, and I've seen it backfire. So you want to be really careful and cognizant about that those tools do exist, but they're not the first line of defense, right? because if you start to give people adrenal tissue, they're going to get a lot more adrenal hormone. And if they're in stage one and they're taking bovine adrenal cortex, they're going to be more stage one-y. That's not going to help the situation. But if they're a flatlined stage three, then it's for sure it could be helpful. So you're going to keep those kinds of things in mind, especially some of these formulas. It just says adrenal formula, and you go to find out that somebody has taken that formula and their levels go through the roof. I actually had somebody who did that. We had tested her and her levels were low, and somebody recommended a supplement for her, adrenal supplement, and she went and tried it. The next time she got her test done, I was like, whoa, what did you do? She went from being low to like these super high numbers. Well, I started quizzing her, what's going on? And then she finally told me that she was taking this specific supplement that had adrenal cortex in it. So you got to be careful with that stuff. So Eleanor says the ratio should be 6 to 8 and DHA should be 6 to 8. Yeah, I just realized that they're the same. Good catch on that. Let's see. And here it says 5 to 6. That's interesting. Didn't the previous one? Oh, 5 to 6. Yeah, so the ratio is 5 to 6 and the DHA, so it's a little bit different. The ratio is 5 to 6. And I must have been reading it wrong. I was too far away and I was seeing it at 60. It's kind of blurry. So it's 5 to 6 on the ratio and 6 to 8, ideally 7 to 8 on the numbers. Yeah, good question. Good catch, Eleanor. Okay, so we'll go back and we'll go to the next one. This is just put up as a review. You guys have this in all your documents. It's kind of little cheat sheet, the substances for adrenal fatigue based on the stage, and it tells you approximately doses and approximate times. Again, you use this to customize it to each individual person. Okay, so I have some of these pictures here, and I think some of these we went over. So we're going to go through some cases, and I would love to get you guys involved with the cases. And then if you have any cases of your own, we can talk about those as well. So if anybody is on the phone and hasn't done one yet with us and wants to do a case and walk through it, please do raise your hand with a *2, and I'll just kind of take you through it. I can do the first one if you want, and then we can go through and you can do the rest. Some of these are these old ones that don't have numbers on them, and some of these I've got numbers on. So the older ones are a little harder to do. So we have Chris. Is it Chris in Westchester? Hurlitz?
This is Violaine.
I just realized it's Violaine. It shows up as Chris. Okay, great. Hi.
Hello.
So you want to tackle this one?
Yes.
All right. So tell me your thoughts.
Okay, let me see. So where is she? The square. Okay. Yeah, okay. So she is low in the morning, and then she's going down, down, and down, and she's got a little reserve at the end of the day. Oh, she's having like a second, she's having like a second wind.
Yeah.
At night. Mm-hmm. So that would be stage 2, going on 3.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, and because we don't have the exact numbers, you know, this is good because we get to see the pictures. And yeah, it could be 2 going on 3, I think, is a really good assessment because she does still have some reserves there, but she's pretty bottomed out during the day. So I would put her the same place, Violaine, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And we don't have the DHEA here, so we can't tell. But we know if the DHEA is not low, when you've got numbers of cortisol this low, it's basically the body doing a last hurrah. And that sometimes happens right before they're going to crash. The body says, okay, let's just try. Let's make some more DHA, see if it gets us out of this. And no, it doesn't crash. So if ever you see really low cortisol numbers but high DHA, it's either they're supplementing with it, they have a partner who's supplementing with it, is maybe doing a cream and they're getting the cream, you know, because that happens a lot. Or they are, they're probably having that last hurrah before they crash big time. Okay, good. Yeah, so what would your approach be with somebody like this?
I will make sure she's getting all her nutrients, her supplements,
Which ones
and
would you especially
looking
be
to
looking at?
bioidentical hormones. Oh, she will need something to ease her into bed. Some sort of passion flower or lemon balm, some calming herbs at the end of the day. And then, yes, make sure she gets all her nutrients, and then I will recommend the bioidentical hormones. It's pretty advanced. So that will be probably 9 drops, starting with 9 drops of pregnenolone, and 2 DHA or 2 or 3 DHEA.
Yeah, I'd probably go with the 2 just because she's so close to stage, but that's perfect. Yeah, 2 to 3. You could see how she feels too. You might start with 2 and then see how she does and go up from there. And you know what I wanted to point out, Violaine, was a good distinction you made, because her midnight, her bedtime cortisol is not outside the range high. So you might think, well, she probably is not having trouble sleeping, but relative to the rest of the day, she's like super stimulated, and that relative stimulation is oftentimes going to create that problem where they can't fall asleep. So very good. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And then you'll look at the adaptogens and things like that, based on the other things that might be going on. You know, maybe this person is prone to urinary tract infections, or you might look at something that also supports the kidney, like cordyceps, or you know, maybe this person also has asthma or some sort of a lung thing, and you're thinking, oh, maybe some astragalus and cordyceps. And so you really kind of look at the whole picture, and that can help you to customize it. And yeah, you know, making custom herb formulas is something that it can take years of herbal studies to do. But we're not talking for the whole constitution. We're talking with the adrenals in mind. What are some of the other effects that these herbs have? And the more you use them, the more you're going to get comfortable with it, in knowing, you know, how to help people to determine which ones are good for them. So, awesome. Thank you.
I have a lady I'm working with, and we don't have her test yet because she took a long time to do the test, and then she was missing a tube.
Oh, no.
So are we having another session like that, or this is the last one?
This is the last one for the adrenal program, but you can certainly bring that to any of our NEPT calls, because we're together for the next year and a half or two. So
Do that. It's an interesting. I'm looking forward to get a result.
absolutely, absolutely. It'd be very interesting. And you know, when you're waiting a long time for people to get the results, it's a good time to really reinforce all the things that apply for all three stages. So you look at your charts and see what applies to all three stages. Oh, you know, the vitamin C, the B complex, zinc, magnesium, vitamin D, you know, so you can get them, and looking at their stress levels. What is their stress? How can I identify it? So you can really do a lot of work with people before you get the test results back. And sometimes people just want to do that because they don't want to spend the money, and they say, well, can we just work on some of this for a while? You work on them for a few months, and then they take the test, right? We never know what the change was, what the baseline was, of course. So that's, you know, kind of frustrating not knowing. But on the other hand, there's so much you can do without knowing the test, the generic general stuff that you can customize to them, that you can get a lot of results even before you get the test back. So don't hold back on working
Now
with
we had
them.
a couple of stations. We had one station last week, and it was good. There was plenty to talk
Yep.
about, and I had plenty to recommend
Good.
because she has to make changes, so she can't do everything at once.
Right.
So it was enough to get started. I have a question while I have you, if you don't mind.
As long as it's adrenal related, you can ask whatever you want.
It's related. I heard you recommend in one of the coaching calls to one of the lady, the P5P, the pyridoxal 5-phosphate.
Right.
And I wonder if I could take some of that. It's good for the brain, the heart.
Yeah, so how do you know if you need it, right? So people who have a tendency towards anxiety or depression or sleep problems could certainly benefit from P5P because it's involved in the creation of neurotransmitters. People who have hormonal issues like the, you know, thyroid-related issues, reproductive-related issues, the P5P could be very helpful because it's definitely related to those things. Anybody that has oxalate sensitivity or tendency towards kidney stone could benefit from P5P because it's involved in the excretion of oxalic acid. So there's a lot of situations. P5P is very helpful in a lot of situations. So certainly if you've, you know, you're working with somebody with any of those things happening along with the adrenals, even more so you want to get them on the P5P.
Okay, that's why I'm wondering if I should try it myself.
Sure.
So, and then if we take that, we just take it once a day, or we take it instead of the vitamin B5?
No, that's P5P is B6, and B5 is pantothenic acid. So really for the adrenals, usually you need both.
That would be on top, and
yes.
Once a day.
Yes, it depends, you know, depending on what I'm working with somebody. Some of them come 25 milligrams, some come 50. So if somebody has heavy duty, lots of neurotransmitter issues and long standing, I may put them on the 50. But most people I just put on the 25 and then we see. How are you doing? How are your moods? Are they better? Are there other things that we could do?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try. I kind of like a mood swingy.
Yep.
But I'm not really like, I sleep well now. I sleep pretty well.
Great.
But I'm kind of like...
Give it a try and see how it feels. The only downside to trying it is there's certain genetic situations where it doesn't do well because it pushes pathways a little bit. But I don't see that happening very much. I've read about it more than I've seen it happen. And I use a lot of P5P with my patients.
Okay, so I should try, and so should I try at night? Should I try?
If you're not having trouble at night, I would try it if there's specific times of the day when you are either more anxious or more depressed or feeling the mood swings more. I'd probably go for it during the day rather than at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I started stage 3, and I'm feeling better. I'm having like spikes of energy. But sometimes I feel like tired and wired a little bit in the afternoon.
Okay, so maybe that's a good time. Maybe take it at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'll just try.
Give it a try. Let us know. Okay. Thanks, Violaine.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to move on to the next case, and it looks like Michelle raised her hand. So let's see. Michelle, you're brave. You raised your hand without even seeing it.
I know.
Good for you. I love it. And know that when you're working with real people, you're not going to be, you know, in front of a group of 25 or 30 others with not knowing anything about the patient with just an adrenal test in front of you. So this is kind of like national board type situation, right? Here's the case. We have nothing about it. Tell us what's going on. But the interesting thing about these labs, what I love about it is that you can tell a lot about a person. And I've oftentimes done that. And I say, oh, wow, you're having trouble sleeping, aren't you? Yeah, how did you know? Oh, you're having a really hard time breaking. And your energy goes really up in the middle of the day, and then it crashes at this time. And they'll go, how do you know all this? I didn't tell you anything. And they think you're a fortune teller. But really, you're just reading their cortisols.
Right.
So it's fun. All right, so you've got a case here. What do you think?
I think this person's stage 3.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, they're basically flatlined.
They are.
If it goes down farther,
yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, even more so than flatlined.
Yeah. So this is somebody that's been there for a long time, won't you say? That's probably been really struggling for a long time. Now, this person is not somebody who you're just going to give a little bit of, you know, licorice tea in the morning and they're suddenly going to feel like a new person, right? It's going to take a lot of rebuilding.
Right. Yep. I think, like, making sure that they get started on all of, like, the vitamin C, the B5, the B complex, you know, the zinc, the vitamin D, you know, all of the essential fatty acids, the a multi-mineral. I mean, that's kind of for sure baseline for everybody. And then for, like, the bioidentical hormones, I would get them on, like, the pregnenolone and the DHEA. Probably, well, pregnenolone for stage 3 is, like, 12 to 15 drops 3 times a day, and then the DHEA is two drops 3 times a day.
Yep.
I'm stage 3, so I can kind of relate. I mean, I would check to see first if they have a blood pressure issue, but I would put them on the licorice root extract 3 times a day if they don't have an issue with high blood pressure.
Right.
Just because that has seemed to help me.
Yep.
I think doing the bioidentical hormones has made a big difference too. And I think with this, like, you know, they didn't get this way overnight. It's like, what the hell is going on in their life?
Exactly.
And under a lot of stress. So
they
need to take a look at, like, their home life, their work life, you know, probably, you know, do they have any other health issues that are putting their body, you know, do they have digestive stress?
Right.
Do they have blood sugar issues?
Right.
They're probably having hormonal issues.
Oh, yeah.
So I would for sure, like, ask them about all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
If they were having thyroid issues, like autoimmune thyroid, along with this adrenal issue, I might suggest, like, Remania.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using the chaga, which I think that is helping me.
Yep.
But I mean, they could definitely look at the other. We could definitely look at the other mushrooms.
Yep.
I don't really know the other mushrooms as well. I would want to know too if they're having issues like with getting sick a lot. You know, is their immunity really low?
Yeah.
And this would also have to do with you know, if they have like an autoimmune condition.
Right.
Then we know it's gut related also, so that would be something that we would need to take a look at if there's some autoimmunity stuff happening.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Cordyceps can be good if they have, like, problems with, like, respiratory breathing problems. And it's good just to help give you more, I think, stamina, you know. Kind of have a question. I guess with me, with being stage 3, I do have like the female hormone thing happening. So it was kind of a progression of one thing, like kicking one leg out from under the table and then another and then another. For me, like, I don't notice so much. I tend to be more like hot. So would that be something you would ask them before you would really look at the herbs? I mean, would you, as a practitioner, be wanting to, and you want to match the herb up with their symptoms.
Exactly.
Would you also match that up with, I mean, does it matter if the herb is like warming and they're hot all the time, would you not?
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
You would want to use more cooling things.
You'd want to use
more
cooling things. And if they tend to be very moist, you'd want to use more drying things versus
right.
they tend to be dry.
Right.
And that's a whole Chinese medicine piece.
Those are some things I'd look at, I guess.
Yep.
And being stage 3, I guess one of the other things that I would kind of maybe steer them a little bit on is if they've been this way for a while, I would probably encourage them to maybe take at least, I mean, look at the herbs and then maybe have them do some of them in tincture form instead of powder or a capsule, just because I think they might be, it might help them experience an improvement faster, like give them some relief faster than maybe just doing the powder. I mean, I would be having them do like the elixirs and, you know, adding different herbs to their smoothies and that kind of stuff too. And of course, like looking at their diet, but like what I would want to get to the bottom of where their stress is coming
from. Exactly. Awesome. You know, what you said about the hot was definitely right on. You just don't want to, like ashwagandha tends to be heating. And if you have somebody who's just a little warm, you might be able to get away with it. But if somebody's hot all the time, ashwagandha is probably not a good herb for them, even if other things indicate that it is. But
right.
the point you made about the tinctures, and what I love about tinctures, especially for people who are those very sensitive folks, right? Oh God, every time I take this herb or that herb, I just get, you know, I get wired or I get this or that. With the tinctures, you can titrate the doses so carefully. So I'll oftentimes have people get individual tinctures of these things and they just do single drop dose. Even if it's a typical 30 to 40 drop dose tincture, I will have them start with one, go to two, go to three, and just bring it up. And it's so good because if they, you may have them where they are maybe taking 10 drops of one herb and 20 drops of another and only two of a third. Whereas if you'd gotten a formula, you wouldn't be able to control that. And so they can actually, you know, do a experiment for a while. And if they're tired of opening up multiple bottles, you can have them show them how to make their own combo tincture. But I love doing the tinctures like that because you can say, nope, that one didn't work. Oh, that one did work.
Now with the tincture, they're actually just doing however many drops that they figure out works for them.
Yeah.
They're just putting those drops either in water or directly under their tongue, correct?
Yeah, it's usually best that way as opposed to putting it in a smoothie. I mean, certainly you can put it in an elixir or a smoothie, but it's just, it gets in quicker. And that's why you said earlier, you know, about it being a quicker way.
Because it gets in the system. Because you're absorbing it through your mucus instead of digesting it through your digestive tract.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so it gets in quicker. And some people can't tolerate, I like to just take my tinctures and pop them on my tongue and go for it from there. And other people don't like that and they'll put it in a little bit of water. Some people go as far as putting it in a little water with a little stevia because they're
usually the tinctures are kind of nasty tasting, but
I
assume that's because they're more concentrated probably.
They're concentrated.
Maybe it's the,
and they have alcohol in them.
Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now what would you do? What would you do, like her cortisol looks like it drops more significantly between 4 p.m. and midnight, so I don't think she's probably having an issue like going to sleep, but I think she's probably not feeling like she is rested when she wakes up because it's so low in the morning.
It's so low in the morning. She just wants to keep on sleeping.
Yeah.
But let me just point out in your observation, though, you said it drops most consistently between 4 and midnight, but actually that's not where I would consider the problem spot. Because really...
Because it should go down during that
it
time.
It should go down, and it's following the exact curve. It's actually following the exact curve. So really there's no...
I would be more concerned about from 8 to 4 p.m. because it's so significantly, at the beginning of the day, so significantly below the norm.
It's possible that she actually feels her best between 4 and midnight. That for her, it's almost like getting a second wind, right? Because if you look at where noon is, it's below the curve, and then 4 is at the curve. So to her, that's like, oh, it's a surge of energy. Perhaps.
So she might be. She might even stay up late if she's got a second wind.
She might. So she might actually have a problem falling asleep, even though we wouldn't expect it from here, because she's like, "Oh, I've got a little energy. Now I'm going to go clean the house."
Yeah.
So those are. That's
and
why
then
the
possibly
history.
Staying up later and not getting enough rest could
It could very well be why she's so tired in the morning.
So, yeah, these are all questions. Right. Nothing takes the place of speaking with the person and getting...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. That was super.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it seemed like it was an easy one.
Well, you didn't know that in advance. Oh, did you have the slides printed? You looked in advance.
No.
No? Okay.
I was just going off of what you've got showing on your webinar. And I was like, oh, God, I hope it's not really hard. I guess.
You did great. It sounds like you really are grasping the material. You're owning it. You're doing really, really well with it. So congratulations on that.
Well, I don't know if I would have done as good if it wouldn't have been stage three. I mean, I feel like I kind of know my own, but like the stage one and the stage two are a little bit like less clear for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure the more I work, I mean, going through these charts like this is really helpful.
Good. I'm glad. It's fun too. I like doing it.
I had a question about what you were talking about with the last gal, that P5P.
Yeah.
What exactly is that? That's not B6, is
it? It's B6. B6 is pyridoxine hydrochloride. Now, a metabolically active form of pyridoxal hydrochloride is when it's phosphorylated. It has the pyridoxal 5-phosphate. So at the fifth carbon, I guess, there's a phosphorus that gets shoved in there. So the phosphorylated...
It is a little bit different, but the base...
It is. Like it is. And that's the one... The active form that the body uses is the P5P. Now, some people do really well just supplementing with that, especially if they've got some metabolic breakdown. And other people do okay on the B6 itself. I tend to usually supplement P5P just because it's like, give it to the body.
I was curious because you said if you have hormonal issues, if you have neurotransmitter issues, that would be to use. And you would use that in place of the B6 or in addition to the B6?
It depends on the person. Okay. You could use it in addition.
So I'm asking for myself because I do have hormonal issues, and I just recently got my neurotransmitter tests back, and all of my neurotransmitters are low.
Mm.
So it's like, maybe that's something I should be on.
It could be, yeah. Cause
I'm not taking enough supplements.
Like you're not taking, are you doing a B-complex?
I am.
Yeah, so the B-complex is depending. Some of them already have P5P in them. Some of the more knowledgeable companies will put the activated form in.
Premier Research Lab.
Oh, yeah, it's P5P. They already have P5P.
Oh, so it has it in there then.
Yeah, but you're taking the liquid one?
I am.
Yeah, so it's not that much. So you might need a boost. You might need an extra boost. Now, Premier does have a liquid P5P that you could do.
Okay.
It's a lower dose, but or you can do a capsule P5P and see. Because vitamin B6 is a cofactor for a whole lot of enzymes in the body.
Okay.
It's a cofactor for the conversion of the amino acids into the neurotransmitters. So the conversion from, say, 5-HTP or tryptophan to 5-HTP and then to serotonin and then to melatonin. B6 is involved in that. In the case of hormones, it's involved with estrogen metabolism and latching on to the used up estrogens and getting them out of the body. So there's a lot of really good reasons for going P5P. Plus, it's a cofactor for making liver enzymes, so it helps protect the liver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons.
I'm curious if... Now, I haven't started this. I haven't even bought it yet. But my doctor, I just got a bunch of test results back. And my doctor went over. He did like a urine test from Sonesco. I don't know if you're familiar with that lab or whatnot. But it's the one that checks like the HP axis for the neurotransmitters.
Right.
And he's recommending that I do like the Sonesco supplements. And I'm just wondering if you are familiar with those at all or not.
I'd have to look. My experience, and I'm not trying to bias it anyway, but my experience with a lot of the supplement lines is that the idea is good, but the implementation is not. That they often have excipients. They have a lot of mag stearate in them. Some of them are in gelatin capsules. I mean, so I'm really careful about the lines, and I'm not a big fan of formulas until I've honed it down with people with the individual ones. It's just the way I am. I like singles until I've gotten the formula, and then I'll go. Because if you go buy this $40 or $50 bottle of this nice formula.
I know, they're really expensive.
Then you say, well, I had a bad reaction to it. Right? So
well,
not a big fan of them.
One's called Prolent, one's called Lentra, one's called Procyte D, and one's to bring up serotonin, one's to bring up GABA. There's a Somni TR, which is to help improve sleep quality.
You okay?
And then a Procyte D, which he doesn't want me to start on for.
Yeah. So again, here's the deal. And this again, I'm not saving anybody. You okay? Take some water. Is that a lot of these test companies, like Sinestra does it, neurosciences do it, they do the test and they give you the results and they interpret the results by you need this formula, this formula, and this formula. So it makes it very easy for doctors who aren't as versed in all of the nuances of how to do this. They're new to functional medicine. They're just like, oh, wow, cool. It's easy for them. It's not as effective as it could be by customizing. That said, some people, like people who have ironclad stomachs, who don't, you know, they're not environmentally sensitive, they don't tend to be sensitive to supplements, they can generally take those. And if there's stuff in there that their body doesn't need, it'll just excrete it. But there's others who are so sensitive that if they only need a certain part of that formula, their body has a lot of trouble with cleansing, detoxifying, getting rid of what they don't need. So it's just really a matter of going with the person. Now, if this is a person who's like super busy, they just want a quick fix, and they tend to be pretty robust, as I'll call it, then you probably get away with those. That's just my bias. Again, some people do great with formulas. Some people love formulas. I'm just not a big formula person. I like to get my hands dirty, so to speak. You know, I want to get in there and manipulate the specific nutrients and give the person just the amount that they need. And that's a little bit more challenging to do.
My next question is then, I mean, that's something he thought that would be good for me to do, which I know I need that help.
Yes.
But, like, when I enrolled in the ERC program, is that something that we would go over, like, on that initial thing and help
absolutely.
Me figure out? I mean.
Absolutely. Who did you choose for your coach?
Lynn is going to be my coach.
Well, cool. Well, between Lynn and I, we'll take good care of you. We'll make sure that it's okay. That we look at all that stuff and we come up with a plan for you. Absolutely.
Sounds good. Okay. I mean, I guess I'll just wait on this then and see what you come up with that maybe was more personalized for me. I was just
right.
Like, God, I wanted to ask you about that. That's why I uploaded those test results because I thought, God, you know, these four supplements. It's like, you know, $125 for all this stuff. And it's like, I don't know if I'll be able to do it or if I should do it, you know,
right,
like you
how
said.
How long will you have to do it for?
It's gonna be
Here's what I would recommend.
And it's like, you know, I don't want to spend the money on the supplements if I'm going to have to turn around and do something else anyway.
Right. Here's what I would recommend. Get on Lynn's calendar. Let her do the initial thing. You've just done an initial intake with Linda from your previous, so because you were with Linda, right? So you've got that, you know, Lynn and I can both access that and set up with Lynn, get on my calendar, and we'll take it from there and we'll come up with it. And just get on it quickly. Just go, you've got access to Lynn, find out how to get on her calendar. For me, you just go to the gold resource page and you'll see my link to my calendar and you get on it. I've already got your labs,
okay.
So, and I'll pull the history from what Linda did with you and we'll just jump right in, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Bye. That's that. We have one more hand up, and I'm trying to do my little in my brain interpretation of the names that are usually off. So this is Newark, New Jersey. Charles Thomas. Hello.
Hi, it's Lisa Lewis.
Lisa Lewis. Okay. Hi, Lisa Lewis.
Hi. I just had a quick comment about the last case.
Yes.
In reference to this person having such a low cortisol and that flat line. This is kind of a person also who historically I think has, if they've had this much stress and that and their body's kind of been in this state, that they may need adrenal. I mean, they may need
yes. some adrenal. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. I was thinking that right at the beginning and I didn't say it. This is the case where, yes, you go in there and you support them, you do everything. And if you're not seeing a response, you know, that shows that they're responding pretty well and they're open to doing the glandulars, then I would certainly look at it. I think that Pure Encapsulations has a formula that has the glandulars in it. Bezwecken used to have something called Isocort. I don't know if they still do. That works phenomenally well if it's still accessible. So that's the case where, you know, if this person's been, you know, vegan for 30 years and says there's no way I'm going to do that, or there's like really anti anything, that's fine. You just work with them. You just explain that it's just going to take longer. But if you wanted something to quickly move things up, this is what we could do. Absolutely.
Also, because their bodies are so depleted in this respect, I also know that this type of person tends to have like a lot of chemical sensitivities or a lot of food sensitivities and different sensitivities. Exactly. So you have to kind of like push them into their regimen with a fine tooth comb. You kind of just have to ease them in and ease them in and ease them in instead of throwing the kitchen sink at them, because they may be a little bit more sensitive to things.
Yep.
Maybe more reactive,
exactly. Yes. And this kind of person, I've had people with cases like this where we've given them like one or two drops of licorice and it's given them help. And if they went to three drops of licorice, they got a headache and were overstimulated.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's really playing it by ear with people. Those doses are guidelines. They're not Bibles. They're guidelines. And the other thing you might want to make sure of with this person is that if you give them DHEA, I would go with and start with just the one drop a day, go to one drop twice a day, go to one drop three times a day. Because if you go right into the two drops three times a day, it actually may suppress their cortisol further. So if you ever give somebody their DHEA and they're in a low level of adrenal fatigue, and they start to say, well, I'm even more tired since I took that DHEA, it's probably because the DHEA is suppressing cortisol. And they're already so low in cortisol that they can't take it. So very small doses, you know. Somebody like this, I would definitely move the needle very, very slowly. So thanks for pointing that out. Even on the DHEA, I would just go to the one drop. I would just go to the two. The pregnenolone, you may not start with one. You see how they do. You can go a little higher. I wouldn't do DHEA without the pregnenolone, because the pregnenolone will help them make more of everything. If you just give the DHEA can possibly suppress cortisol. And if they're out of raw materials, they're going to feel worse. So that's a good point. That hasn't come up before. Thank you for, it just occurred to me to say that. That if they have that very low levels, do not ever give them just DHEA without the pregnenolone, because it could make it worse. Thank you, Lisa. That's great.
You're welcome. I didn't want to stop. I did one last week, so I didn't want to take up. I didn't want to, you know, do a case when other people needed to get their turn. I didn't want to.
Well, we'll see how it goes, and I may call on you again to do one. I remember you did such a good job of it last time.
Thank you.
Good job. All right. So we have one more hand up, which is good old Lynn. Lynn.
Hi. My phone keeps dropping, so I'll try and be quick here. You were just talking about people's reactions, and sometimes I have people that they take both pregnenolone and DHEA, and they'll be great one week, and then the next week they basically tank. And I know we talked about this before on other calls, and I was looking at my notes. I had written down, you said that actually we need to raise their pregnenolone, and I wanted to make sure I wrote things down correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So especially when they're in a stage 3, you want to go more aggressively with the pregnenolone before you get aggressive with the DHEA. And it might even help with somebody like this stage 3 person to get her on the pregnenolone first. Get her on the pregnenolone, get the body making more of everything. That should even help the DHEA go up if her body can do it. Of course, you're working on the stressors, because you don't want all of that to support, well, in this case, you do want the pregnenolone to go to cortisol because it's needed, but you also want it enough left over to go to other places. But yeah, that brings up a good point. I think that if you're in some state like this where somebody's flatlined or extremely depleted, that start with the pregnenolone first and then add the DHEA.
Okay. Great. I just make sure that I'm reading my notes correctly.
Yeah, and when you find that to be the case where somebody does really well and then they tank, it's like anything else, right? It's like, oh, wow, this is so cool. And then the body goes, okay, well, what's next? Because that was cool for a while, but I still have a lot more work to do.
So, right, and that's what you, I had written down. You likened it to cleaning a house. Like, okay, we've been cleaning house and we're doing great here, now what?
Yep. Yeah.
Great.
Yep. Good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else want to do? We have one. Let's see. Let me go ahead. 1:18 to 27. So we have 9 more cases left to go through. And some of these might be duplicated of what we already have done or do some similar to what we've done before. But if anybody else who hasn't done a case, Tony, you didn't do a case.
I am.
Did you do a case?
I have not done a case. I'm listening in. I have about 8 minutes left. I'm working on my webinar this evening.
Oh, when's your webinar?
It's, I'm working on getting stuff to Visa. It's Wednesday.
Oh, cool. Very cool. So you're not at your computer?
I am now at my computer, yes.
Okay. So you want to do a case real quick?
I can try.
Okay, let's have you do it. Because you're probably in similar state to this one right now because you're all stressed out about your webinar.
I am, just a little bit.
I'm so excited. All right, so what's this person?
Okay, so I'm looking at the reference range is green, and the patient's results are above the reference range. So cortisol is, I'm looking at this correctly, is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning, it's high at noon. There's a little dip at 4 p.m., and then this person is supercharged at midnight, probably because he or she is wired or working on something, like I am, and can't get to sleep.
Yep. So this one is a super stage what?
One, yeah, definitely stage one.
Super stage one. And anytime you look at the chart and you only see one number in the reference range and it's even at the high end of the reference range, it's clearly, this one's clearly a one. This is somebody who is hypercharged, right? They're just like, their highest cortisol level is at night. There's no way this person's going to sleep.
No, not at all. And so, obviously assuming this is a short-term issue, we still would want the person to get good quality sleep. So passion flower, lemon balm, to get that cortisol to go down and to make them relax a little bit.
Yep.
Would definitely be, I think, advisable.
So you just said a key phrase, to let it go down a little bit. Do we have to get them to go down a little bit or a heck of a lot?
A heck of a lot.
So what's a heavier hitter? What's a stronger hammer than the passion flower and lemon balm? Because those are pretty mild, gentle kind of things. What might hit her over the head with a hammer and knock her out a little bit more?
I'm not sure. I'm looking. And looking here, herbs suitable. I can't see would chamomile be considered stronger?
Nope, that would be mild. So what I'm thinking two things. One of the things I'm thinking of is phosphatidylserine or magnolia, because they're very specific for lowering cortisol.
Okay.
Very specific.
Why is it magnolia? Lower cortisol, decreasing anxiety 5 times more powerfully than Valium.
Yep.
That's some pretty powerful stuff.
That's pretty darn powerful. Yep.
Yeah.
And I was going to say also valerian, but valerian you have to be super careful with because a lot of folks, not a lot like large percentage, but a decent percentage of the population will actually have what's called a paradoxical reaction to valerian, and they'll be wired from valerian. And we don't want to take that chance with this person. So
no.
I wouldn't do valerian with this person, but I would go for phosphatidyl serine and magnolia.
Okay.
Those are two things I would go for. Okay. One or the other or both.
I learned something tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't bother with it in morning. She's good in the morning. She probably feels good at the morning. But, like, I would say, well, she keeps going up. So probably right after breakfast, I might start with the phosphatidyl serine and the magnolia to try to bring it down. So, the morning is good. She's feeling good. I would, I probably would actually have her take it right with breakfast to bring it on down.
It's really funny how this stuff kind of mirror me right now. I mean, but it gets slow when I'm out of this phase that I'm in. And from my own personal experience this morning, I mean, I was feeling so good. Did a 90-minute yoga class, wanted to take a bike ride, worked on my project a little bit. I mean, I'm still running on super high. I didn't have any dips today at all that I am aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's probably because you're shooting your cortisols up. So the other thing that might feel counterintuitive, if we're looking at this person and she's got the low DHEA, support the DHEA, because all of her pregnenolone is being used for cortisol. You run the risk, if you gave her more pregnenolone, of her using it more to make more cortisol. So that's the iffy piece, that becomes the art, not so much the science, of I would focus on bringing some of this down a little bit before and really work in it. What's her stress? Like you said, is this an acute kind of project she's been working on? And she's been, you know, taking coffee all day to try to keep herself awake to do this project, and now that she's wired? Or is this her chronic way of being? If this is her chronic way of being, this person's heading for a crash, like, really soon. Because it's gonna, there's just so much cortisol you can make her stores. Well, one of the things that would be a good test to do to see is, remember on your 24-hour test we did the other day? So we looked at cortisone-cortisol ratio. So I don't know if there's a 24-hour test that you can do or some other test that you can do to get that ratio more easily, but then doing that whole $400 panel. But but it would be a good thing to see, because I love having those numbers, because I could tell people whether they're heading towards burnout or they've got some time that they can really use to rebuild themselves before they go there. So that would be another thing to look at. And that's something that, for those of you who weren't on that call, that was an NEPT call the other day, we did, it's a 24-hour urine steroid panel from Meridian Valley Labs, and they look at not only the adrenals, they look at estrogen, all the different metabolites of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, et cetera, and all these ratios, and cortisol-cortisone ratio. Cortisol is the active hormone in your bloodstream. Cortisone is the storage form. So it tells us how much you've got in storage. And when I look at a cortisol-cortisone ratio and I see it very high, meaning that the cortisol is high and the cortisone is low, this is where I start warning people that you're heading to burnout, guy. You know, you don't have a lot of reserves here. It's only going to be a matter of time if you don't change things now and get these stressors down. And then on other people who have a better reserve, like I said to you, you're low, but you have a good reserve, probably because of your yoga and your good food and all this. And you probably burned yourself out over the last few months because of all the stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah. So and of course you want to support them, because this person's going to be C depleted big time, right? Because they're using it all up.
Yeah.
They're using it like crazy. They'll probably need, you know, more pantothenic acid is not as important as the C and some of the other nutrients. But I think once you get this cortisol down a little, then you want to support the pantothenic acid and the pregnenolone and all that real well. So good.
What about the mushrooms that support the immune system, I've been taking a lot of that, or drinking a lot of that like crazy.
I take that like crazy too, and that's really good for supporting the system, for strengthening the system, for building back up. So that would be good stuff. They're not going to be stimulating, so you want to go for those neutral things and bring her down and do neutrals, but don't do anything stimulating. Stay away from licorice. I wouldn't do ginseng in this case, unless you can be really careful with it, or if you're experienced with it and know how to do it. So that's what I would go for.
Oh, this is Amazing how this kind of lined up. I enjoyed this process.
Good. Yay. Well, good luck with your webinar. I thought I had gotten an email from you today that said your webinar was over.
No, it was just a second email to people who didn't. If they missed the first newsletter, just a follow-up newsletter saying, you're in, you're fine. If you already registered, you're good. This is just for people who didn't get a chance to look at it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But thank you for talking about it and helping me again with this adrenal area. This is fascinating stuff. And I really appreciate everyone's thoughtful analysis, too. That's really helping me to understand it. So I really appreciate this call so much.
Thank you. And Ted, thanks for taking the time to do it in spite of your busyness. So appreciate that.
My pleasure. Okay. Y'all take care.
Thanks, Tony.
Bye.
All right. So, and it looks like Michelle put her hand up again. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, I had my mic off. I got a question on that last one. You know how you said that the cortisol was really high, and then you had said that you wouldn't have her do, like, the progesterone or pregnenolone because that might just cause her to build more cortisol?
Yeah. But at this point, early on, but the DHEA is low, then I would give her the DHEA.
We'll just give her the DHEA drops by themselves and not do the pregnenolone with.
At the early stages, and I would go with like the higher range of the DHEA, like I think it's 3 to 4 drops in stage one. I would go with the 4, like maybe work it up, because the DHEA can help suppress the cortisol. So we get our cortisol down. Of course, we're working on what are the stresses that are causing that to happen. And then maybe after a few weeks and she seems like she's calmer and she's maybe sleeping a little bit, then I would want to support it, the pregnenolone, especially if she's also having, you know, menstrual irregularity, she's having, you know, PMS, or she's going through menopause and it's tough. So that we have signs that those other hormones are out of balance. And with somebody like this, I would probably then have her do her sex hormones pretty early on in the process, because I want to see how depleted they've become as a result of this. So I know at what point and when to start doing. I may go with, you know, progesterone direct instead of going the pregnenolone. You know, it just depends on what shows up there.
Okay. All right. I had thought you had said one other time that you wouldn't do DHEA alone, but this was would be the exception.
Yeah, everything's a little bit, you know. Yeah, exactly. It's all unique. So in general, I wouldn't, but yes, in this particular case. And
I heard that right.
No, stage 3, I would not give DHEA alone in stage 3.
Right.
And it's the opposite reason. The reason I wouldn't give DHEA alone in stage 3 is because DHEA can bring down the cortisol. Well, that's the exact effect we want to have here.
Okay.
Right? So stage 2 and 3, I probably wouldn't give. Well, stage 3. Stage 2, you know, is variable. But stage 3, for sure, I would not give the DHEA alone.
Okay.
And the more you work with this stuff and the more you like this whole, you know, chemistry, the process becomes kind of second nature, the easier it'll be for you to get an idea. But it's all, everybody's going to be different. And you're going to work with them and you're going to go, wait a minute, why did that phosphatidylserine make them agitated instead of putting them to sleep? What's going on? And then the more you have these reactions you don't expect and you pull out the books and you start studying it, the better a clinician you tend to be, because you're starting to see a wider variety of cases.
Right. Okay.
This is good. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I also want to add here that a lot of these nuances that certainly most of the MDs you're going to run into don't do this kind of analysis as deep. They're just like, okay, here's a go, stage 3, here, take this, take that. So I'm teaching you to really treat each person as an individual and kind of try to understand where you would vary. This is a protocol, but where would you vary it and how would you vary it? And that's going to come with time. You can take the core protocols and you can be very safe with them, and then you can build on it for each individual. Thank you. And who else's hand is up? Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I was actually going to volunteer to do one.
Yay. All right. Here you go.
Oh, great.
So you got all the information on this one. You're lucked out here.
Yep.
Okay, so tell me where you're going to go first on this one.
So you look at their cortisol sum.
Okay.
And that's pretty high.
Yeah.
And just the four vial test.
Yep.
And they're going to bed okay.
They're probably feeling completely crashed after that busy day.
Exactly. They're stage one.
Mm-hmm.
And their DHEA is low as well. Okay. So I would want to bring it down. So they're going to bed, they're waking up, they're ready to go, and then it just kind of keeps going down from there.
Right, but it's going down perfectly aligned. Look at it. Perfectly aligned with the normal curve. Right? Yep. So it's not a matter of it's going down, really, that you're concerned about. It's just that the whole thing is up until from 4 o'clock on, and then boom, they go down at a much more dramatic rate, which is good. That's good. But they're probably so exhausted from being hyper all day that they crash at night.
Right. So, all right. I am obviously the regular nutrients, the vitamin C and the Bs.
Yep.
The B5. Don't need anything heavy duty at night to get them to sleep.
No.
But maybe more if they're making an elixir, they could put something in there like magnolia. I'm going the wrong way.
Start at the daytime. Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be a good early, you know,
morning. So you want to
morning.
Calm them down a little bit.
Yeah.
Something more like milky oat or chamomile even to help calm them down. The ashwagandha, the mushrooms will be good. I do have a question. We're talking about phosphatidyl searing.
Yep.
Helping with their hippocampus. Now, I know that sunflower lecithin also helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a good thing to include when you're working on that as well?
Yeah, I think it is. And sunflower lecithin has all of the phospholipids in it, mostly the choline, phosphatidylcholine, has a little bit of phosphatidyl serine and phosphatidylethanolamine as well. But you're not going to get that heavy hit dose to really significantly bring it down. But the reason that the sunflower lecithin is so good for the hippocampus and the memory is because of those phospholipids.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And yep. So that would be something I would put in there.
Yep, that's a good thing to include. We haven't talked a lot about that in this course, but sunflower lecithin comes as this kind of gooey, pasty stuff, or it comes as little crystal kind of flakes, and you can put that in smoothies real easily to just help with overall brain and memory enhancement, as well as other things that phospholipids are good for. They're excellent, and they're important in the methylation pathways. They're also important in lipid metabolism in the body, so keeping, you know, the cholesterol, the HDL cholesterol ratios really good.
Okay. Well, the focus, at least what I'm looking at here, is helping them to not wake up so hyper-vigilant in the morning.
Yeah, so you're thinking give them something calming at night so that in the morning they wake up more relaxed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this person, think about this, though. This person might be falling right asleep, but what kind of sleep problem might you be hearing from this person?
Well, I'm wondering if they shouldn't do another vial because maybe they're waking up in the night.
Right.
Because they're going to bed so early, more than likely. And then they're probably waking up about, you know, the 1 to 3 time, and they're still awake in the morning. They just haven't calmed down. So I would probably suggest that they do another vial.
Yep.
Or the nighttime vials.
Yeah, we can't like totally infer that from here, but when somebody's that high in the morning, chances are good that they started coming up a lot earlier than that 4 o'clock. And so by four, a lot of these people are going, I just wake up at 4 o'clock and I just can't get back to sleep. People that are that wired in the morning will tend to have that pattern of, I just wake up at four and I just can't get back to sleep.
I used to be that way.
Did you? It happens from having babies too, right? Because you're used to waking up like so many times when you have babies.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
I was waking up at 3:34 in the morning, and then by 8:30, I was down. That's my minimalist approach.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you like to do it from the food standpoint, so those are good approaches. But, you know, you really got to get at the heart for all these folks is, why are they so stressed out? What is causing their hypervigilance? Why are they in a sympathetic dominant state? And how can you help them with those diet and lifestyle factors, whether it be the foods or allergens? I mean, people who have a lot of food allergies can have this hypervigilant state. People who have hidden infections, people who have a lot of exposures. A lot of times with something like this, it really has to do with that. You know that person that's just like this, and they say, why am I not feeling well? I don't understand it. I'm eating greens, and you're like, I just had to do heart math for 15 minutes just to get back into my own space. So they don't even realize they have that energy about them. So again, you're not going to be doing these in a vacuum. You will have at least spoken to the person, if not seen the person, and you're going to get a sense, a very good sense from their voice tones. So if you don't see them, you're going to hear their voice tones. And if you say, okay, let's breathe together, let me teach you heart math, and they go, oh, that was good, now let me tell you about, and you, yeah, I didn't even finish the breath.
I'm breathing.
Yes, I am. Halfway through the breath, you're still breathing, and they're like, on to the next sentence. So you get really good at helping them to calm down.
There could be abuse going on. They can't sleep at night because they just don't know what's going on. And if they don't wake up before everybody else, and get, you know, there
could be a whole lot of stuff, right? And it depends on how soon you might talk to this person and find out that they've been in a startup business for the last year, and they've been starting it up, and they've been under all this stress because they have to be on. You know, it could be that, right? It could be that, you know, their mother died, their sister's in the hospital, their cousin had a stroke, and they're dealing with all kinds of family stuff, right? The one thing we do know when we see it this high is that they have reserves. Because they wouldn't be able to do this anymore, right? Because when they're in this state for a certain length of time, boom, they're going to crash if they don't do the work that we're teaching them to do. Yeah, absolutely. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me do that.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Anybody else wants to do one, even if you've done one before, if you want to do one, we can do it, and then I'll just go through the rest. You can actually look through, if you have the slides, you can look through. Here's an interesting one. Anybody want to tackle this one, or should I? Raise your hands if you want to tackle it. Okay, I'll do it. So, I'm going to go through my process. I check my cortisol sum. It's 30. Where's 30? I'm right dead center in that normal range, maybe a little tiny bit on the lower side, but right dead center in the normal range. So right away I'm thinking, either this person's normal or they're in stage 2. Well, then I look at their DHEA. They're 0.7. There's no way they're normal. And then I look at their curve. Their curve doesn't follow the normal pathway. So this person's not normal. They're in stage 2. So whenever you see a normal, you can assume they're in stage 2, especially with a low DHEA like that. Okay, she's not at that almost on the verge of stage 1 kind of thing, because she's still got some reserves going on here. You see that spot right there, right? So this is a stage 2. She's, you know, decent first thing in the morning. Maybe she's waking up and feels just fine. She's a little on the low end, but still okay. Noon is crashing. Something happens at noon that causes her to go up. What could that be? Well, it could be that she eats a lunch that's totally not consistent with her physiology. She went out for hot dogs and pizza and beer, and her boss yelled at her, and she got a call from her kid at school, and she has to go pick up her kid. Or it could be so many things that would cause that. And then she comes back down, at midnight to right in the low range. Now, we could look at this and say, well, this person just had it. How do you know this person didn't just have a bad day? And if you would have taken it the next day, she would be fine. How do we know? Your DHEA doesn't get that low when you just have one bad day. It just doesn't happen. It's got to be chronically low to get that low. So that's how we know. So this person's in a stage two. We want to, you know, I won't repeat all the standard stuff with the vitamin C and the pantothenic acid and all that. I would be looking at really questioning this person, what's going on at noon? What is it that might be causing that to go up like that in the afternoon? It could be that she has a very high glycemic lunch, which causes her blood sugar to go up. Maybe she's not insulin resistant, she just is hyperinsulinemic, meaning she produces too much insulin as response to that lunch, and her body clears it too fast, her blood sugar crashes, and then her body perceives it as an emergency and shoots out the cortisol to try to bring it up. That's often what happens to give you those highs in the middle of the day like that. Not necessarily. It could be, again, the stress at work. Maybe that's when she commutes, a number of things. So you really want to be talking to her about what happens at noon, what happens at lunchtime, what happens in that early part of the afternoon, right? If you want to look at herbs, I would be looking at, if you can't figure out what's happening there at noon and correct it, I might look at a little pinch of licorice just to bring her cortisol down at that time. But I want to know why it's up, really. It's not like she has this pattern of it always being up. So when we have that one point that's high, I tend to want to find out why, magnolia or something like that. But I tend to want to find out why rather than just treat it. That noon one, that's where I would be. That's what I was thinking in terms of licorice. You might want to be looking at that noon and going, well, you know, if she's got noon is crashing, I might want to 10 in the morning, give her a little licorice to bring her up. Again, you know, why is she crashing? The licorice is a little safer to do and it could bring her up enough as long as she doesn't have high blood pressure. You got to make sure of that. And then bedtime, I would ask her about her sleep. It's likely that she sleeps really well, but you know, if she doesn't, then there's other issues going on and you'd want to look at what the middle of the night one. I've had people who have a 1 at midnight and then a 3 or a 4 in the middle of the night, like 3 o'clock. So something causes it to go up. So it really is helpful before you have them order the test, if you're the one that's recommending the test, is find out about their sleep patterns before you decide which one to order. And if they do have an issue with sleep, then I would recommend they get the 5th vial. The way I like to run those tests when I do the 5th vial is, okay, they've got the 5th vial, they're gonna collect the middle of the night one first. So you just say, I'm gonna do this tomorrow, and they go to bed. If they typically wake up at 4, they're going to wake up at 4 naturally, do not set an alarm, and they take the vial. If that night they just so happen to have a full night's sleep, then you don't test it that next day. You wait until they actually do. So if it's somebody who has like 3 or 4 nights a week, they wake up in the middle of the night, don't make them set an alarm to get up. You're not going to get an accurate reading. You want to get the vial when they actually wake up on their own. So you just put the vial there and they go, okay, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to do it the next day. Tonight I did it because I woke up in the middle of the night. And then once they've taken that middle of the night vial, then they go ahead and do the 8 o'clock, noon, 4 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. Okay, so it's a really important consideration, because when you don't do it that way, then you run the risk of it just being artificial when they wake up, because you've set an alarm. Well, yeah, cortisol might be up because you set the bloody alarm, right? And then it might artificially change things throughout the day. Okay. And if there's any questions, let me just check in the Q&A to see if anybody's got questions. Yeah, we do. We have a few. All right. So let's see. Reese says, when I take the B5 the next day, my body feels heavy and exhausted. I've taken vitamin B complex, green powder, astragalus, and a protein powder. Is the vitamin B5 with the others too much? It's interesting. I would look to see at the amounts that you're taking, so don't take the full amount of the B5 if you've already got a bunch of B5 in there, but I've never seen that happen before. So if it's you're taking it at the full dose, the 150, 500 milligrams three times a day, then go ahead and lower it down and see if that makes a difference, and then play around with the times of day to see. I've never heard anybody say that before. The thing I can think about is maybe it stimulates more DHEA to be taken and it causes your cortisol to go down. It could be an excipient in there that your body's not agreeing with. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. So I would play detective with it. I'd cut it out completely. And then I assume you've tried this a couple of times, right? That it's not just one time, because one time experiments don't really tell you much of anything. So you did it several times and you realize that. So I would go a few days without it. So get back to the point of not feeling it and then experiment with the dose. You can try it with just one capsule and see. You could see if it makes a difference between morning, noon, and night. You can also try going to below one capsule if need be. But anytime somebody's doing something that their body doesn't react well to after you've done some experimentation, then if you can't figure out why, you've just got to chalk it up to it's just not good for them for whatever reason, right, at this particular point in time. Lynn, so you already asked that question. Reese says, how would phosphatidylserine affect a person with Hashimoto's? I wake up at night, 2 to 2:30. I'm up for an hour or two. I'm not financially able to take the test at this time to check my hormones. It's a good idea to take that without taking the test. I'm on Nature Thyroid. I don't think there's a problem. Phosphatidylserine can actually be helpful for people with Hashimoto's. I don't see any problem with that if you do indeed have Hashimoto's. I've given it to people with Hashimoto's, no problem. So yeah, you could definitely give it a try, and I would certainly look to do at least one of those antibodies as soon as you can get the money together. I think it's like $50 to do one, like TPO is what I would do if you can only do one. And then I would say, I think it's like $69 or $79 to do the panel. So Heather, if you come on, just go ahead and raise your hand. And in the meantime, I'm looking at this next one, which has a cortisol sum of 14.3, so opposite. 23 is to 42 is the total, is the range. This person is in stage 3. So she's got low DHEA. This is a clear one, right? Because the DHEA is clearly even below the reference range. But remember what's to be said to do with the reference range? Throw it out. Really, we want it to be at least 6. So she's got this. She's not flatlined like the one we saw earlier. She actually follows the curve, and except for at midnight, she actually goes into the normal range. So she's normal at bedtime, low end of normal, compared to below it at the other times. So she might actually feel that difference. She may actually feel a little wired at bedtime because it's highest proportionally in the range. All the others are below the range. So this is, you know, again, we go through the same thing. I would be careful with the DHEA, but not as concerned about it as with the other one, because she was flatlined, the other case. But again, I wouldn't add DHEA unless I've already added the pregnenolone. And all the herbs like we've talked about already. I'll just point out if there's some specific things that are unusual. And it looks like Heather is on. Hello, Heather.
Hello. Okay, so the new one is up now, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we have this person's cortisol is high all the way across. The sum is 54.3, so that's mm-hmm. above the normal range. DHEA is within lab range, but at the 6 to 8 or 6 to 10 where we want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a stage 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's see. This is probably a case where you would use the phosphorylated serine.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even do, depending on how they're sleeping, you could even do the full 4 doses before each reading.
Mm-hmm.
And
the only thing I would interject with that one is that She probably feels really good when she wakes up in the morning. And since the morning one's only a little above the range, I may not play with that too much. I may just go for it later on.
Okay.
But I would also ask her, like, do you have any dips in your energy? How's your energy here and there? Because if she's feeling like she has some dips, you might not want to give her the PS at that point in time. You may want to just, like, play around with it differently. So it's going to depend. But, yeah, technically on paper, you'd look at it and go, yeah, you can just give her a dose, you know, morning, noon, afternoon, and night. And it could be helpful.
Okay. And, you know, just for some clarification on that, in the chart it says 100 to 200 milligrams 2 to 3 hours before each high cortisol reading. Now, would you generally take it with a meal, so that you would do it at the meal that's before the high reading?
Or usually, I think it does. I think,
so wait, like, if they actually took their cortisol measurement right at noon, would you have them doing it in mid-morning?
Yes, that's right. I would probably do it now, but this is high all day long, so technically it's all high, right? Because she's just high. There's no points where she goes normal. So in this case, it's pretty straightforward. She could just take it whenever she wanted to, really.
Right. So this one, but for one, let's say we had one that was going up and down, or that had a couple of high ones, would you look at what time they actually had done their hits?
Yes.
And, okay.
Yes. I always ask that. And then I usually will write it on the chart itself. So, because it says, you know, 4 to 6 or 6, I just say, okay, what time did you actually take that? And they'll go, oh, I think it was around 7:30. Great. And I just write it down, because that way when I'm dosing and making recommendations, I can make the recommendations based on when the actual measurements were taken.
Okay. Yeah, because I've been coordinating most of the things I'm taking with meals, just because it's easier. Makes it easier to manage everything. And so I was curious about that, since I'm not stage one and not even thinking about the phosphorylated serine for myself.
No.
Curious how you'd approach that.
Yeah. Yeah, usually. And the same thing with the licorice, because it's not going to have an immediate effect. Although some people it does, you know, an hour or two before those really low readings usually helps with the licorice.
Yeah, and I've been taking licorice in the morning, like right when I wake up, so that it helps give me a little big start.
Yep.
Okay, and then, so basically I would be doing all of the basic nutritional support that we've already gone over with the C and the Bs. And the minerals, and I would be talking with this person about what levels of stress they might be experiencing through the day, and helping them with heart math and any other stress reduction techniques, and I would maybe do we'll talk with them about how they're falling asleep, and whether it's probably difficult for them to fall asleep. Although since they're generally following the curve, even though they're high, I would guess that they're probably, you know, maybe not waking up in the middle of the night, although their morning one is the closest to normal of all of the rest of them.
Right.
So maybe they're not waking up, but we'd discuss that. Absolutely. And see if magnolia or reishi or something else calming might help with that.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Anything I'm missing?
No. No, but this brought up a question, like comparing this stage one to a previous stage one where the person had like a, let me see where it was. Where is the other stage one? Here, 66.
It was somebody who shot up way higher.
Yeah. Well, there was that one, but then this one, 66 and 1.3 on the DHEA. So she's way higher and also way lower on the DHEA. So I would guess, you know, can't be certain, but I would guess that this one is a much more chronic situation than this one. I would say this one might...
Okay, so the lower DHEA is a much more chronic situation than the 4-point.
It kind of says that they're going to be more... They've been there much longer, right?
Right.
That they're depleted. They're more depleted. They're more depleted, right? So even though this person doesn't have as high a cortisol, she's doesn't have as low a DHEA. So this one, I would say, prognostically speaking, is in better shape. And this might be somebody that would be easier to get managed than the other one. And again, these are numbers, right? We're just like theoretically using the numbers to predict someone's life. But it all comes down to, we're not going to get into a consulting practice where we have a whole bunch of these tests submitted to us, and then we just write suggestions based on the test. That would not be ethical or, very effective.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Good. I think that's pretty much it. I think, and all the adaptogens, again, just I want to reiterate to look at the person and ask them lots of questions and read about those adaptogens until they become second nature because you've been using them a lot. And then what you might do is when you see some of this and you talk to somebody, you're going to get a hit. You're going to go, oh, this person needs some reishi, or this person would do well with that. So a lot of that's going to come in with practice. But in the meantime, use the cheat sheets that I've given you to just kind of see. And you can always look those herbs up in an herb book. I just gave you like the highlights of those particular herbs. Sometimes it hits like, oh, yeah, this person's training for a marathon and she's in stage one. And she looks like she's starting to go down in her DHEA. And maybe some cordyceps might be helpful because that's really good for endurance and athletics and stuff. And that's where this person gets colds all the time, and maybe chaga. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this call is great for that because I can really relate to what Michelle was saying, and I've just really drilled into the things that I need for my case, mm-hmm. and I have kind of overlooked some of them, and this call really brought out the magnolia for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I for some reason, I just didn't notice magnolia at all before, and then when it came up on Tony's case, it just really... I was like, wow, and I have somebody that I'm working with that magnolia could really help. So yep. I'm glad that it was brought up.
Yeah. That's why the best learning is going to come from doing cases because, yeah, you have all the information, and the information is like, yes, you get 7% of it because you don't have anything to hang it on to, right? You don't have a case to say, oh, yeah, or a real person. And so the idea of just doing as many cases as you can is going to really be helpful.
Yes, I have loved going through these cases on these calls with you. This is awesome.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being so open to do another one. And it's getting to be at the 2-hour mark, and I recognize the people on the East Coast are going to want to go to sleep soon and should go to sleep soon if we're following our own advice. So if there's anybody else that wants to do one, you have a burning desire, or you haven't done one yet, go ahead and raise your hand, *2. And otherwise, I'll just go through the next couple myself. There's one, two, there's five more. So, and you see, we spend much more time at the beginning talking about them than we do at the end because some of them are just like, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that, been there, done that. So on this one, we have a 52 as a cortisol sum. So, and a 1.8. So she's high cortisol, low DHEA. So she's stage 1. So what I wanted to say we talked about earlier differentiating between stage 2 and normal, right? Because they have a normal cortisol. But with stage 1, you want to differentiate sometimes between alarm and actual stage 1. So alarm is where they're in that state of high cortisol, but they're adapted to it biologically at this point. They're not really seeing a lot of the downside. They're just feeling really peppy and good, and they're pushing and pushing and pushing. And they're not really seeing the downside yet. A lot of the downside that is happening, though, is that high level of cortisol consistently affecting blood sugar levels, affecting the lining of the blood vessel, some of the hidden stuff. But on the surface, they seem okay. Their DHEA is fine. They're going. That would be distinguished from stage 1 by the DHEA, by how that is, and also by the pattern. So somebody who has a nice, clean pattern, but their DHEA is 1.6, is going to be in more further along in their process than somebody whose DHEA might be at a 7, but their cortisols are very high. So that's what I wanted to point out here. So we basically have high in the morning. She comes down almost to noon, and I know we're taking all these people as she's. The truth of the matter is about 80% of people who do adrenal tests are she's, so we're pretty kind of safe in doing that. So at noon and afternoon and nighttime, she's pretty much following the curve, but she's just a little bit above it. But in the morning, she's a lot above it. So this person may or may not be having sleep problems. You know, she's right there in the middle of it. You got to know she might be having sleep problems because this might be something that comes up like early in the evening and is building up. Like maybe it's 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock that it starts to go up and she's waking up early in the morning. So don't discount the fact that possibly they're having some sleep issues just because their cortisol is normal at bedtime. Especially if they have that high. If they're normal at bedtime and they're low at the beginning of the day, probably they're not having trouble sleeping. But again, you can't assume. But if they're high in the morning and low at bedtime, it could be that they're just going to raise up a little bit too soon. Okay, so again, the same sorts of things we did before. You could do some, I would probably not go with the phosphatidylserine as much as the magnolia here, unless I spoke to this person and she talked to me about the fact that she's having memory issues, that she can't find her words, that she's very foggy brained. Then I might do the phosphatidylserine just for the effects on the hippocampus, and or put her on, as Lynn pointed out earlier, put her on the sunflower lecithin. So there's a lot that we can do and a lot of variation here. In any case, I would certainly want to bring that morning down. And I want to find out what the story is with her sleep and why she's in that state. Talk to her about the stress management, look at gut issues, etc. Okay. I saw Michelle's hand go up and then it went down again. So Michelle, if you have a question again, go ahead and raise your hand again. Okay, so this particular one, we've got a total of 26, right? So where's that? 26 is in the normal range. Look at the DHEA. This is an easy one. It's really clear cut. Very low DHEA with normal cortisol is going to be a stage 2. We look at her numbers. She's low normal in the morning, low normal at noon, crashes down to flatlined. Like still normal, but flatlined in the afternoon and flatlined at bedtime. This person, looking at this, she's unlikely to have trouble sleeping, but it certainly has to be asked. And it may or may not be the cortisol. I mean, to have a spike, I wouldn't expect to see a spike based on these numbers at all. But you never know. So I would be looking at this person and supporting them, all the supportive nutrients as we've been talking about. I'd probably look at maybe some licorice or ginseng or both in that, you know, probably mid after like noon to like whatever that number is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon maybe. So maybe at 2 or 3 and then maybe late morning. So I'd probably do 2 doses of the licorice. I wouldn't do licorice after 4 o'clock because it can be too stimulating. And then some of the good adaptogens depending on how she is. With maybe she has a thyroid issue, I might look at doing the ashwagandha because it's a good one. Tulsi is certainly a nice tonic one that you could do. You can certainly do some elixirs, or what I've been doing, the lazy person's elixirs lately, because instead of taking out the blender and having to clean it, I've been heating up the water, putting my herbs into a little cup, adding some powdered coconut to it and stirring it around and making like a little yummy elixir that way, or a tea really, rather than elixir. So that's another cheating way to do it, but I like to do that. And then the ones that I gravitate towards are things like cordyceps and reishi and a little bit of ashwagandha, but not always, tulsi, things like that. So whatever you can do to support her, again, check the charts to see what she resonates most with. You may even read some of the descriptions with her and say, I'm thinking this herb might be good for you. Let me tell you a little bit about it. And she might say, oh, I never do that. Or that's completely opposite of me. Oh, well, what about this one? So you can always ask their help with getting it. Not so much saying, oh, no, I don't know what herb to give you, so help me. But like, let me read some of these herbs and let's see which one resonates the best with you. And we'll start with the one that resonates the best. So that's a way to do it as well. There's so many ways to do this. Here we go. What do we have? Cortisol sum 29. This looks almost identical. 1.3 on the DHEA. Clear stage 2. It's very similar to the previous one, in fact. Oh, it's almost the same, but not quite. Look at that. Very similar. She's 29 and 20. Yeah, very similar. Okay, so same things that apply to the previous one. Oh, except for this one has a higher, yeah, this is another consideration. On this one, she's got the higher cortisol at bedtime, and it's a little bit higher than the norm, and actually she straight lines out. So she might be getting a second wind here and may need some things to calm her down. Maybe something as simple as the chamomile or lemon balm or lavender on her feet or those sorts of things. And magnolia might be possible, but I wouldn't really go towards magnolia here because I really don't want to get her cortisol totals down anymore. I just want to adjust a little bit. But if she is having a lot of trouble sleeping, then I would consider magnolia or phosphatidyl. But I would start within this particular case, I would probably start with the gentle soothing, relaxing, neural relaxing, where they relax the nerves. Okay, what do we have here? We have, oh my goodness gracious, look at her cortisol sum. It's 9.3 and her cortisol, her DHEA is 0.1. Do you think this person's in stage 3? Do you think she's borderline stage 3 or way down in the rocks? She's almost flatlined, like the one we saw earlier. She's way down at noon, and she goes down, and she goes down, and she continues to go down. Likely that she's not having trouble sleeping. She's just sleeping like a rock, and she wishes she could sleep for 14 hours a day. So we want to help this person and support this person. This is somebody who you could give licorice to 3 times a day. Start with small doses, start with one drop. As Lisa pointed out earlier, she said about how people who are this depleted are very sensitive to every little thing you do. Again, this is a place where you might consider glandulars or her getting a prescription for adrenal cortical extract. You can get that as a prescription. This is the kind of case where I might. So I would start with all the basics. Start with getting her stress levels down, getting her nutrients going, getting her on some of the adaptogens, getting her on some licorice, and give it 2 to 3 weeks and see how it feels before, you know, starting to do stuff. Because I've even seen people in stage 3 where they've taken the extracts and it just hyperwires them. You got to be really careful, and they're a lot harder to dose. Tinctures, you can just give a little drop, a little drop, a little drop, and you can totally titrate it to their needs. We have one more, guys. Oh my. Yeah, not quite as bad as the previous, 15.3. The average person who doesn't know how to read these would look and say, oh, her DHEA is normal. It's between 2 and 10. No, 3 is still low. We don't want her at 3. We want her much higher than that. She's flatlined in the early part of the day, all the way, and then she goes down at bedtime. Likely she's not having trouble sleeping, but she may. She may have issues. A person like this may have issues with their thyroid, thyroid receptors and thyroid conversion, because those are really related to having adequate levels of cortisol. And we are doing a thyroid class starting real soon. Actually, we started it last week with the kickoff, but the first module is happening this week on Thursday. So those of you who are not in it, if you want to get in it, we don't have a direct plan for doing a practitioner version, but if there's a desire for it, we'll just do a couple of calls with the practitioners to go through some of the thyroid stuff to just give you some ideas on how to read those labs. But we will be going through that in the class. So if you're interested in learning that stuff for your clients, just go to thyroidreviveandthrive.com. So the adrenals can affect the thyroid dramatically. So we have a stage 3. Even though she's got a 3 in her cortisol, her DHEA, it's still not that great. I would be doing the bioidentical stuff here for sure. But again, I would go really slowly on the DHEA, especially since she has a decent amount. I probably wouldn't do that, at least initially. I want to see how she reacts. But the pregnenolone for sure, to help give her the raw materials, and the licorice root and ginseng and whatever other herbs seem to fit, plus whatever is her stressor, and the whole rest of the stuff with, with the nutrients. So that concludes our cases. This has been awesome. I really have enjoyed presenting all this to you and getting your feedback. And I like the interaction. I really like you guys just going in and doing these with me, because you're going to learn it by doing. And Ree, as far as your concern about the Hashimoto's, phosphatidylserine should not be a problem, but you can also look at magnolia. We've talked a lot about magnolia today, and that can be very helpful at helping you sleep as well. Okay, that was the last of the questions. This was no questions on the chat. So I'm just going to open up the line and go to interactive mode. And this is your last chance if you have any questions, comments, concerns, things that you want some last tips on, go ahead and raise your hand. Otherwise, I'll just open up all your lines so we could say goodbye. And I appreciate you being here, and I hope you check out some of our other practitioner courses. Most of our training is in the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training, which is a certification program. Many of the folks on these calls are in that already. And we go through all of these things. We'll be going back through adrenals again, and we'll go into a little bit more depth on some of the nuances that we didn't do in this class, because it's a longer section on that, and thyroid and everything else. So if you're interested, go to neptapply.com, and we'll have a talk with you to see if you're a good candidate for it. If you're interested in the thyroid, go to thyroidreviveandthrive.com. And it looks like two people raised their hand. One is Simone, and the other one is Lisa. So, Simone, hello.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hi.
It's been wonderful hearing everybody's thought process around choosing things specifically for these different cases. So I've been learning a lot. Just personally, I haven't retested yet. I think I'm starting to get close to that place with my stage 3.
Yep.
I've been using a lot of most of the stage 3 herbs and doing the elixir every day. But I'm still having some issues with sleep, with waking up early. I'm generally getting to bed by 11. I would like it to be earlier, but here I am. It's 20 after 10 on the East Coast. And I do have a lot of family stress going on right now. But, just kind of rising to the occasion, trying to keep myself calm in the midst of it all. But any other thoughts?
Well, what have you tried? So have you tried the magnolia? Have you tried phosphatidylserine to see if that helps just at bedtime?
So,
did you do your vial in the middle of the night? I don't remember if you had done the middle of the night vial to see if it was
We talked about it, but then, I don't know, somehow that got lost in the shuffle of everything.
Uh-huh. And have you tried taurine ever? I was just thinking taurine, because it helps to make GABA, the amino acid taurine.
And what form of, where would I get that?
You just get that anywhere. 500 milligrams, I would do a 500 milligram dose at bedtime.
Is there a brand you recommend?
Yeah, any of the good brands, like Pure Encapsulations or Thorn, would be good.
Okay. I took phosphatidylserine a while back, but I wasn't taking it at bedtime.
Well, with stage 3, you should only take it at bedtime.
Okay. Well, that might be why.
Yeah.
it didn't really have an effect for me.
Right.
And then the magnolia. That would be also at bedtime?
Yeah, definitely. You do not want to take anything calming other than bedtime when you have a stage three, unless you have a spike in the middle of the day, then you could do it. So I would say play with all the different calming herbs. It may be a combination. Schizandra comes to mind as a good one. I've had good results with people with that. The lemon balm, milky oat, the obvious ones, the magnolia, and then the phosphatidylserine. I would probably go with the others. Unless you already have the phosphatidylserine, you can certainly experiment with it for a week or two and see if it helps with the sleep. It could take a week or two to kick in. Might help with brain fog, too, if you have that tendency to have brain fog.
Maybe only at night. But again, I'm waking up like 4:45 in the morning. And that's less than 6 hours sleep. And I'm not going back to sleep. And part of that is I'm just really keyed into the fact that it's getting light earlier. I live in the country. I like my windows open. The birds wake up, even with earplugs. I'm hearing them. So
you're a light sleeper.
Taking these, and I have taken Schizandra and passion flower at bedtime with, not really consistent results. So
here's what I'm thinking. I would want to know what's your first morning, because you're waking up really close to morning time, so it's a lot different than if you were waking up at 2. I would be concerned about taking something that's going to lower your cortisol at 5:45 or 4:45, so 4:45, because it might lower it too much for the morning. So you'd have to be careful about that. Look back at your morning. I don't remember whether your morning was super low or if it was close to the range. But if it's close to the range, you might be able to.
Which is surprising because I never have trouble. I don't have trouble waking up. But, I mean, I might think, okay, I don't want to get up just yet. I'm going to rest a little while. But, I don't fall back to sleep.
But you don't fall back to sleep.
Yet when I get up, I get going. I'm not like dragging, although I would say just generally overall my energy level is not what it has been before, but maybe I'm comparing that to, stage one and stage two of adrenal fatigue, where it's actually falsely high.
So I would say you can certainly try it, and if you wake up more tired in the morning, then don't continue it. So if it does put you back to sleep, but you wake up in a grog, then I wouldn't continue to take it. I would look for something else. But I think the time to take it is when you wake up. Have you tried taking it when you wake up at that hour? Or is it just at bedtime you've taken it?
The Schizandra and passion flower, I took at bedtime.
Oh, okay. So you need to start approaching it. You can take things at bedtime, and then you take them again when you wake up. And it may take a week or so or more, but that could be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and it's wanting to know why are you waking up at that hour. What wakes you up? It might be that your cortisol is coming up a little bit too soon. But that the best thing when you're going to retest, I would get the fifth vial and do the middle of the, do it when you wake up at 4:45.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Okay.
And how soon, my test was done like the end of November. I started the adrenal fatigue program with you. So
in March we started. So I would say if you started your protocol in March or April, I think you did it in March, right? So March, April, May, June. Oh, I would do it at the end of this month. So order the kit now and then run it at the end of the month.
Okay.
Okay? Okay.
And my morning cortisol was actually 7.9.
Oh, yeah. I'd be careful about, I would do stuff, I would start with more like Schizandra, milky oat, lemon balm, lavender. So put some lavender on your feet, lavender oil on your feet, on the back of your neck. Take a little bit of the Schizandra, milky oat, lemon balm, a combination like that or something, and then go back, or passion flower too. Those four, you can play around with them. I would get tinctures because it's easy. Play around with them individually, play around with different combinations, try them all together, and see if any of them relax you enough to soothe you back to sleep at 4:45. I think that I'm concerned about doing magnolia that close to waking up with a 7.9.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Wonderful. Right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
Be well.
Thanks. All right, so last question is Lisa. Hello, Lisa.
Hello. All right, so to piggyback on what she just said, what I do if I tend to wake up in the morning is I have a nice essential oil blend, and I just take a whiff of it or put a drop on my pillow, and I'm back to sleep in no time. I'm stage three as well. So
yeah, that's a good way
taking,
to do it
instead of taking something, because I don't want to sleep too hard because I need to wake up in a few hours, right?
Right, so, exactly.
Really, the essential oils are really good for that.
What ones do you use? You probably use lavender as one, chamomile maybe.
Lavender, bay laurel. Combination, you can't remember what you put in it. You're like, oh, this works. Let's see, does that work? Yes, I think black pepper.
Oh. Nice.
Marjoram.
I think it's a matter of finding a one that works for you, isn't it?
And lavender. Yeah. Nice. So that, I mean, I just love the essential oils in that respect, because they're really gentle, and you don't have to worry about them reducing your cortisol level too low close to bedtime. Close to waking.
Right. And the other thing you could look at is some of the blends that they're made, like the Serenity is one, and those things.
Those Calm and
so all you those can things. I love those. Like that, so you can get
My question was about the certification.
Yeah.
When is your I remember reading through the information, and I think it was really close to the time when you were about to offer the program and had a whole lot of stuff going on. When is the next time that you are offering or opening that up?
Well, here's the deal. We were originally opening it once a year, and we get such a flood of people asking about it in between and asking us to join. So now we just let people join when they join.
And so it's a rolling entry.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a
perfect.
Rolling entry. So it's just, I would go to neptapply.com and have a conversation with Lynn or Jan or me, and we'll get you in whenever you're ready to get in. We've just enrolled like 3 or 4 people in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's like people hear about it. We're not even doing any marketing other than I tell people about it when I'm on summits, and people just come in and, you know, they don't want to wait until January to join.
Right.
So it makes sense. And the way it's set up is most of the stuff is done. There are, you know, videos and audios and the whole lesson thing. And then we have all these calls like this where we go over cases and we talk and we answer questions. So, yeah, I mean, we recently had some live presentation pieces. And it was basically because I was bored sitting in my room and making the presentations that way. So I invited everybody else to come and join. And we had 3 what we call all day, and we'll do more of those too. We did webinar, like virtual retreat days, we called them. And they were basically 6 or 7 hour days with breaks, of course, as if you're going to a seminar. And we taught that way. So it's a great way to learn. It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful.
All right. So it's and any
NEPT apply. NEPT
apply. NEPT apply. Okay. Perfect. But I'm also doing the thyroid, so.
Oh, good.
I actually retested today. I just mailed in my adrenals today, and I'm going to take my thyroid either in the middle of the week, like Wednesday, or probably by Friday. I'm gonna
great. Those come back quickly, so you can have it back in time. We'll start to do those on calls, too.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. So
great. Wonderful. Thank you, Lisa.
All right. Thank you so much for all your time.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Knowledge. It's been great.
Super. So I'm just going to check one last time on the QA. I don't see. Reese says, I take Health Force products, green powder and earth. Love those things. Seem to help my thyroid. It helps me at night and sometimes during the day when I find myself feeling short of breath. I don't know what's causing that. The shortness of breath could be some anxiety. It could be some electrolyte imbalance. It could be your acid-alkaline balance is off. And sometimes something like cordyceps, because it's so nurturing for the lungs, can help with that. You know, I don't want to throw something at it without really looking at what's going on, but that's a possibility. You said you have sometimes have palpitations. Don't take licorice if you have palpitations. I wouldn't, no. Blood pressure, no, I wouldn't take licorice. See, that's another contra. If you have somebody who has palpitations, I wouldn't do licorice because it could be too stimulating. Blood sugar was, 123 and TPO was 211. So you do already know you have Hashimoto's. You don't have to get an antibody test to do that. I would say make sure you're in, if you haven't already signed up for the thyroid program, sign up for the thyroid program and we'll go through protocols for helping you with that. That would be at thyroidreviveandthrive.com. And that you can get in that right away and see what's going on. Yeah, so your blood sugar is too high, so you need to get your blood sugar under control. And the TPO is definitely too high. That's your antibodies, thyroid antibodies. And there's a lot you can do, and we'll be going through all that in the program. Okay, you guys have been awesome. I've been really enjoying this. I hate these calls to end, but don't let it end. Come and join us for the next round, like get in the thyroid program and come into the practitioner training. We have an insulin resistance practitioner, and at some point we're going to reintroduce our clinical assessment tools for holistic practitioners, which is all the lab testing across all the different functional medicine stuff, but we're working on that. So thank you guys so much. I'll open up your lines so I can hear your voices, and thanks a lot for being here, and we will talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Well, everyone.